Morning somewhere. Good afternoon, everyone. This is the Thursday, December 17th, 2020 afternoon session of the Portland City Council. Keelan, good afternoon. Please call the roll.
Good afternoon, Mayor. Udaly, Fritz.
Here.
Ryan. Hardesty. Wheeler.
Here. And colleagues, I will obviously have more to say later this afternoon, but this is the last council session for Commissioner Fritz. And as I say, I'll have more to say this afternoon, but I want to acknowledge this moment. I want to thank Commissioner Fritz for her dedication and her 12 years of service. And I want to say, Commissioner Fritz, just by opening this meeting, seeing you in person live is wonderful in and of itself. So it's great to you to be here. And I'm just grateful to you and grateful for all you've done for the city of Portland. I won't give a long speech now because I'm going to give one later.
Well, thank you, Mayor. I'd like to explain. Since all of the items on the agenda this afternoon are mine, I was able to print out everything I need and do this meeting on the iPad. I'm usually on my computer, which unfortunately doesn't have audio or video. So I'm glad to be able to join this last one, actually by special request of Open Signal as well. So thanks to Open Signal for all of the great work that you've done over many years in making sure that people like my parents-in-law at Cherrywood Village can watch City Council from the comfort of their own homes.
The cat looks thoroughly bored, Commissioner.
I took the precaution of feeding him. Usually he would be attacking me at this time to get him to get me to feed him earlier and earlier every day, but so far so good.
Now he's longingly looking out the window. I suppose there's a bird or something out there that's got his attention. That's awesome. Well, thank you. Under Portland City Code and state law, the City Council is holding this meeting electronically. All members of council are attending remotely by video and teleconference, and the city has made several avenues available to the public to listen to the audio broadcast of this meeting. The meeting, of course, is available to the public on the city's YouTube channel, eGovPDX, www.portlandoregon.gov/video-channel-30. The public can also provide written testimony to council by emailing the council clerk at cctestimony@portlandoregon.gov. The council is taking these steps as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic and the need to limit in-person contact and to promote physical distancing. The pandemic is an emergency that threatens the public health, safety, and welfare, which requires us to meet remotely by electronic communications. As always, thank you everyone for your patience, your flexibility, and your understanding as we manage through a difficult situation to conduct the city's business. And with that, we will hear from legal counsel on the rules of order and decorum. Good afternoon. We do have legal counsel present.
You do. Sorry about that.
Lori, there you are.
I had to unmute myself.
No worries. Thank you.
Okay. Mayor, before I go into the statement of conduct, could I just make certain I only heard that you and Commissioner Fritz are present?
No, Commissioner Ryan is also present. Can you confirm that, Commissioner Ryan?
I'm here.
Thank you so much. I didn't hear you respond.
I was 1 minute tardy, and I'm grateful that the mayor starts meetings on time.
Okay, thank you so much.
Sure.
All right. To participate in council meetings, you may sign up in advance with the council clerk's office for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions or the first readings of ordinances. The published council agenda at portlandoregon.gov/auditor contains information about how and when you may sign up for testimony while the City Council is holding electronic meetings. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When your time is up, the presiding officer will ask you to conclude. Disruptive conduct such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting others' testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being placed on hold or ejected from the remainder of the electronic meeting. Please be aware that all council meetings are recorded.
Thank you very much. We have 4 items on our agenda today. The first item on our agenda is item 1012, time certain 2 p.m.
Adopt actions identified through the Regional Collaborative Land Acknowledgement Project that promote consistent awareness and inclusion of Native people in all city business and more equitable outcomes for Native people.
Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor. It's particularly significant that we're hearing this item today on the day that President-elect Biden has nominated U.S. Representative Deb Haaland to be Secretary of the Interior, the first Indigenous person to be on the cabinet, and just a perfect post, and I appreciate that nomination. Many of us had the opportunity to hear Representative Haaland in Albuquerque when we went for the Governing for Racial Equity Conference. I think it was just last year, although that does seem like about a million years ago. To start off with, I'm not proposing the amendment that was circulated in the Tuesday memo. Instead, I move to substitute the resolution for the one that we shared with your offices this morning. This substitute resolution reflects feedback we received from Native community leaders as well as from your offices.
I second the motion. Any further discussion on the motion? Keelan, please call the roll on the substitute.
Fritz?
There are several improvements in this substitute and two from my colleagues. Commissioner Ryan suggested that we note when we have an Indigenous Persons Day city holiday, what we would like city employees to do on that day. And then Mayor Wheeler suggested substituting out a different holiday for Indigenous Peoples Day. And it seems particularly appropriate to me that we should explore exchanging President's Day for Indigenous Peoples Day, given that President's Day supposedly celebrates the 44 of 45 men who've been president, and Indigenous Peoples Day is so much more. But that's to be explored. Aye.
Ryan?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Aye. The substitute is now on the table.
Thank you. And so could staff please share the screen? I initiated the Regional Collaborative Land Acknowledgement Project in 2018 because I wanted the city to follow other non-tribal community organizations and government agencies around the world who were adopting land acknowledgements to honor First Nations. I was interested in the city having a consistent land acknowledgement that could be shared at city-sponsored events, including before council meetings or work sessions. I had hoped that the city land acknowledgement would have been ready before I left office. We are giving the development process the due diligence that it requires and engaging tribal representatives and researchers in that project, as you will hear. And the project has also grown much larger than originally conceptualized in very good ways. We also experienced some unforeseen delays due to COVID. In some ways, this is also good because we are coming forward with actions before we adopt formally the words. And so we always want to walk the talk. In this case, we are doing the actions first. We're here today to provide you with an overview of the process and actions that were identified through the land acknowledgement development process. And so now I will turn it over to staff.
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. Mayor and commissioners, my name is Cynthia Castro, and I'm a senior policy advisor for Commissioner Fritz and one of the co-leads for the Regional Collaborative Land Acknowledgement Project, along with Tribal Relations Director Laura John. Laura and I began the project by consulting with the City Attorney's Office. The feedback we received was that if the city were to adopt a formal land acknowledgement, appropriately naming tribes in the statement would be imperative to avoid causing harm. One approach we could take was to do local research to determine if there was already a universally agreed upon land acknowledgement. We did an online search and called local institutions to learn how they developed their respective land acknowledgements. We found that there was not a universally agreed upon land acknowledgement, that there was a growing demand and interest in land acknowledgements, just as we were experiencing, and that several of the institutions we talked to said that more process was needed. With this knowledge, we moved forward with our city-led process to develop a land acknowledgement. Laura and I have not been alone in this journey. Next slide. We are fortunate to be joined by an incredible team of city employees representing a diverse range of bureaus, as well as all council offices. The number of participating bureaus has grown over the past 2 years as word about the project spread. Together, we have completed a considerable amount of work to progress the land acknowledgement project, learned a lot along the way, and are dedicated to the work that remains. Next slide, please. The city has taken the important step to acknowledge the region's traditional inhabitants in partnership with several organizations who represent the government, professional sports, arts, utility, and philanthropy sectors. Thank you to the Meyer Memorial Trust, PTM Foundation, Multnomah County, Metro, Northwest Natural, City of Beaverton, Portland General Electric, and Pacific Corp, who together have donated $85,000 to the project. And thank you to all of our other partners who have contributed in other ways as well. And thank you to the Regional Arts and Culture Center Council for serving as our financial sponsor for contracts with artists, writers, and scholars working on the project, and Metro, who has been leading the procurement processes to hire researchers. Next slide. The Regional Collaborative Land Acknowledgement Project includes multiple components. The policy we are presenting today was largely crafted by our City of Portland work group. The actions in this policy were based on identified areas of need, such as increasing recruitment and retention of American Indian and Alaska Native city employees. They were also informed by engagement with tribal nation partners who, for instance, shared the importance of city employees receiving training to have a more consistent awareness and understanding of tribal nations and Native people. More recently, Native leaders provided us feedback on this resolution to help us strengthen it. Our city work group is also in the process of drafting content for our guidebook. The guidebook will be posted online and available to city staff, our regional partners, and any members of the public who are interested in best practices for using the land acknowledgements. The guidebook will detail our process, include the land acknowledgements, the significance behind doing land acknowledgements, and a call to action, among other things. For the past 2 years, we have engaged tribal leaders through the city's annual tribal summit, informally or through visits to the reservation communities. In addition to ongoing engagement with tribal government leaders, we recently completed internal focus groups with city employees to discuss how they would envision using land acknowledgements, how their bureaus could go beyond land acknowledgements, and what would be helpful to include in the guidebook. Some of our partners have also facilitated focus groups with staff from their respective organizations. We are now gearing up to facilitate focus groups with Native community members and members of the general public after the new year. As I mentioned earlier, our development process necessarily requires fact-finding research. We're preparing to bring on a team of researchers to conduct an ethnographic overview and assessment to better understand the political, historic, treaty, and or cultural interests, rights or resources that Native peoples have within the Portland metro area. Not only will the subsequent report inform who will be recognized in the land acknowledgements, it will also serve as a reference for our work to build a foundation for engagement with tribal governments, Native peoples, government policies, employee communications and trainings, and other related business. A team of Native writers and scholars will write the land acknowledgements. We envision a fuller length land acknowledgement and shorter versions to allow for diversity of use, such as reading before meetings or gatherings, or physically displayed on buildings or emails. Their work will be informed by the fact-finding research and engagement. Next slide, please. We are excited to announce the team of Native writers and scholars who will write the land acknowledgements. Elizabeth Woody is enrolled in the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs, Oregon, Yakima Nation descent, and Navajo Nation. She has published poetry, short fiction, essays, and is a visual artist. She has 3 books of poetry. In 1990, she received the American Book Award, and in 1994, the discretionary William Stafford Award for Poetry from the Pacific Northwest Booksellers Association. Elizabeth also served as Oregon's Poet Laureate in 2016 to 2018, making her the first Native American to hold that title. Elizabeth joins us today and will share more about herself later. We also are excited to have Philip Cash, PhD, who is of the Cayuse and Nez Perce Nations of Oregon and is a younger speaker of Nez Perce, a critically endangered indigenous language. He He received his double doctorate in linguistics and anthropology in 2018 from the University of Arizona. He is committed to linguistic research that fosters an exploration of indigenous philosophy, ethnography, and culture. Diane Million, who is Tanana Athabascan, is associate professor and chair of the Department of American Indian Studies and affiliate faculty in Canadian Studies and the Comparative History of Ideas program at the University of Washington in Seattle. Yeah. Professor Million holds a PhD in ethnic studies from UC Berkeley. She is the author of Therapeutic Nations, Healing in an Age of Indigenous Human Rights, as well as numerous articles, chapters, and poems. Dr. Million centers her work on questions arising from the effect of capitalism, settler colonialism on Indigenous family and community health in North America. Informed by two generations of Indigenous feminist scholarship, Diane Million seeks to illuminate the ways in which Indigenous life reorganizes in the face of colonial violence and settler social welfare narratives of trauma to embrace lives that are integral in peoples, their histories, and their places. We're excited to begin working with this experienced and talented team. Next slide, please. We know that land acknowledgements can be viewed as empty gestures. That is not our intent. For our team and partners, the land acknowledgements are an important first step in honoring the traditional inhabitants of our area, but they must be coupled with actions. Laura will share the specific actions we identified through the Regional Collaborative Land Acknowledgement Project that we are asking Council to approve today. Thank you.
Hello, Mayor Wheeler and Commissioners Fritz and Ryan. My name is Laura John. I'm a descendant of the Blackfeet and Seneca Nations and serve as your Tribal Relations Director in the Office of Government Relations. Before I speak to you about the specific actions that are included, I would like to bring to your attention the immense significance of this resolution. Today, the city is making an unprecedented stride towards reconciliation with Native nations and peoples. We are not alone in this work. As Commissioner Fritz mentioned at the beginning, today, President-elect Joe Biden announced his intention to nominate New Mexico Congresswoman Deb Haaland, a member of the Laguna Pueblo Tribal Nation, to become Secretary of the Interior. If confirmed, she will be the first Native American to hold this position. And I will tell you, today, Indian Country is celebrating this. For the past few years, I have received countless requests to perform a land acknowledgement for non-Native people by governments, organizations, community groups, and event organizers. I have heard from my Native colleagues that they also receive these requests and share in their frustration that this is an empty gesture and is simply being done to join a trend or build racial capital. Today, I will be reviewing the different actions that are included in this resolution. See if I can do this while juggling several screens. In 2015, the City of Portland formally recognized the second Monday in October as Indigenous Peoples Day. Today, we are proposing that the city recognize this as a paid holiday. This holiday would be exchanged with President's Day as paid for city employees. As we all know, the celebration of past United States presidents is not without controversy, particularly considering the harm that has been done to Native people in this country throughout its history. Earlier this year, City Council made Juneteenth a recognized and paid holiday, encouraging employees to use the day to educate themselves about the meaning of the day and the experiences of Black people. It is our intent that that same ask would be given to city employees for Indigenous Peoples Day, that they spend the day learning more, educating themselves, and celebrating Indigenous people. Oh, there we go. The next directive is with regards, The next directive is with regards to exploring the possibility of providing a park fee waiver for events and ceremonies. An example of this waiver would be for the Bow and Arrow Culture Club's annual Delta Park Powwow, which will celebrate its 51st year next summer. This particular event brings thousands of people to Delta Park to learn, celebrate, and practice their culture. It's a way for the Native community to be in touch with the broader Portland community, and does also bring numerous visitors to attend this particular event. We look forward to that being explored as a possibility. The next directive is to Bureau of Human Resources. Currently, the City of Portland employs 90 self-identified, or excuse me, it's actually lower now, it's 86, I believe, self-identified American and Alaska Native people. It is unclear at this point what their tribal affiliations are, because we do not collect that piece of the data. I regrettably must report that since we first started this project, the number of Native people working for the city was at 102. So clearly the numbers are lowering. This directive is intended to change the trajectory of these numbers by looking into options for providing a hiring preference similar to the federal government hiring preference for Native people who are affiliated with federally recognized tribes. Currently, the city provides a hiring preference for veterans based on their unique political status with the federal government that guarantees applicants an interview if they meet the minimum qualifications for a job. It is our hope that that will also happen for Native people. Mandatory training. The intent of this action is to ensure that all city employees are knowledgeable of tribal governments, sovereignty, and the importance of the city protecting treaty rights, trust responsibility, and ensuring that the city works to for Native people to be able to practice their cultural life ways today and for future generations. I have been working over the past year with the Office of Equity and Human Rights and the Portland State University Institute for Tribal Governments to develop a curriculum that reflects the learning objectives of Oregon's SB 13 curriculum mandate requiring the teaching of tribal history, governance, and sovereignty. The idea behind this particular action is that we are taking steps to supplement education that the majority of us did not have the privilege of receiving in our K-12 curriculums. It is a way to get people up to speed, as well as to educate people that are coming to Portland from other states to work. Next is a directive with regards to Bureau work plans and reports. Currently, I meet with representatives from each of the city's bureaus and offices, as well as elected offices, regularly to talk about the work that they are doing. Individually, I meet with bureaus to provide technical assistance, guidance, networking, and policy advising. That work has grown exponentially since I've been here for 3 years, particularly with the Tribal Nations Summit. With each summit that is held, bureaus are understanding more and more that their work that they do every day is related to the interests of tribes, and are very enthusiastic in how to better that work and better meet the needs, not only of tribal governments, but also of Native Portlanders in the urban Indian community. This directive would have bureaus draft annual work plans that they would collaborate with me on, and allow for them to not only have very clear outcomes that they are striving towards, it would also allow for them to measure and collect metrics on their work that then can be put into an annual report that I will receive from bureaus that I will then assemble into a final report to council that can also be provided to tribal governments at our annual summit. Next, I would like to introduce our guest speakers. First, I would like to introduce David Granfield from Parks and Recreation.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Awesome, yes. Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you, Mayor Wheeler, Commissioner Fritz, and Commissioner Ryan. Nice to meet you, Commissioner Ryan. My first time kind of being in a virtual room with you. My name is David Granfield. I work with the Bureau of Parks and Recreation in our Land Stewardship Division. Is my audio coming through okay? Okay, great. Basically, I started working with Laura John a couple years ago, working on community engagement and access to natural areas. And pretty quickly, we found a lot of overlap in the community that we're working with and the work that we're doing. And Cynthia brought me in to work on this land acknowledgement city work group. And so what I'm going to share with you today briefly is some of the work that I did on the city work group and how that work so far has impacted my bureau and some of the work that I do with bureaus and community engagement here at the city. So I was pulled in specifically to help with facilitating the city work groups. And we basically gathered people from throughout all the bureaus and pulled each bureau together to have conversations about how their bureau, what questions people had about land acknowledgement and what their bureau thinks that they can do beyond land acknowledgement in including this work and Indigenous perspectives in the work and in their workforce. And so in doing that facilitation, I worked with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, the Water Bureau, and the Bureau of Parks and Recreation. And in my time with facilitating those three groups, it really showed me that each bureau has, you know, a lot of overlap, but vastly different programming. And they all brought forward really different questions and comments around this land acknowledgement work and how it can be incorporated into their programming, into their partnerships and their outreach, their hiring, recruitment, how it can affect the stakeholders who are external from the city and influencing their work. It was really cool for me to see that each bureau was just so different. It was one of my first times facilitating work outside of my own bureau. And, you know, the bureau that I work with at Parks, we're very focused on land management, land access, and that community engagement and partnership. And so it was really, really valuable for me to hear from all these other bureaus and to be involved in this work. I don't want to take up too much time here, so I'm going to transition and talk a little bit about how so far, since working and partnering with Laura John in land stewardship at Parks and working on the same acknowledgement, how this has impacted our work. Two years in a row, several staff from land stewardship at Parks and Recreation, several staff from land stewardship in natural area management and environmental education went to the tribal summit. And at that training, we were able to hear directly from tribal people and from tribal communities, from the urban native community, and hear stories and how hear people's connection to land. And since going to that training and getting all of us on the same page, it's really started to influence our work and the questions that we're asking, who we're pulling in, who we're putting on our interview panels, who we're hiring for jobs, what kind of outreach we're doing, what kind of programming we're doing. And I would only hope that by the city continuing to invest in this training for employees, that it would further influence and impact our work and how community is served here in Portland. I think I'm out of time, so I might just wrap up there, but I really appreciate the opportunity to share some of my experience here. And if anybody has questions or wants me to elaborate on anything, I'd be happy to do that. And thank you again, Commissioner Fritz. Really nice to see you here. That's all.
Thank you, David. I appreciate your words. Next, I have the honor and privilege of introducing Elizabeth Woody. Elizabeth?
Nish Patchway, that's a good day. Thank you for having me here. It's an honor to be here and present to the commissioners and to the mayor. I'm born for the Bitterwater Clan And my grandfather's clan is Coyote Pass Clan. My born-in people are the Wayampum people, the Milish Lama, the Taitilpum, the Tenino, and the Wasco Wishram Watlala. Those are all people who live here in Oregon and Washington. For example, Milish Lama means people of the hot springs. Wayampum means people of the falls of the echoing waters, Salila Falls. And I am also have a master's in public administration from the Portland State Executive Leadership Institute. I went to school in Santa Fe at the Institute of American Indian Arts. I've had the honor and privilege to work with people all across the Americas, across the waters in New Zealand, and all of the Aboriginal peoples have a protocol. When we meet one another, we explain who we are born for, where we're born in, the land that we come from, and most importantly, we always ask permission when we're entering the territory of another peoples. Before we set our foot on their land, we respectfully ask their permission. Of course, this sometimes can take all day and can take hours, and I'm sure that that wouldn't fit into a meeting here, but it certainly is something that we all learn from when we meet one another. The recognized Aboriginal title to these lands, of course, were innate. They were here before the United States came here, before the Crown came here, before Spain came here, and also before the Russians came here. We have basically been here for tens of thousands of years, some say 50,000 years, and there's evidence of even a greater tenure on the land. The recognized Aboriginal titles was held here until 1855, which is a treaty that the Middle and Upper Chinookan people entered with the United States government. And by law, no man could pass title without a treaty. There were laws in place from England prior to the United States and laws from the United States that ensured that people would not be, that indigenous people would have that negotiation. The only other way that they could take lands was to completely obliterate and commit genocide, which has happened in California in a lot of places. So these people are the Multnomah, Clackamas, Watlala, Tlalwilala, and the Northern Kalapuya, the Atfalati, the Ahant, Chuyuk, and the Northern Malala, the Latiwi. My ancestors were born and camped in villages along the Willamette Falls and the river. These are the Taitilpums, the Walla Wallas, Tais and Taninos. And these are not Chinookan or Athabascan speaking people. So in 1855, the tribes speaking the three different languages were signatories to the Willamette Treaty, or Willamach, which is a Sahaptin word, which means a certain color of blue, which referred to the falls at Willamette. So these ceded these ancestral homelands to the United States and established policy for the tribes to be removed to the Siletz Reservation, which at that time was 1.1 million acres, and reduced 800,000 acres and more. And the much smaller Grand Ronde Reservation, which was established in 1857, and this was ended in them having 440 acres, which of course was further reduced when these tribes were terminated by Congress. So the most of the people in this under these treaties went to the Grand Ronde Reservation or Siletz. And some of the Chinookan peoples that were here moved to the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs and to Yakima Nation. So at the site at where you are now, many, many trades happened, trading types of things happened, and there were actually a large network of trading sites that went all across the United States and over which many of the major highways follow the trails from trading site to trading site. And so I think that that illustrates that we were very much established as a center of commerce, much like Portland is today. So I think that that's really important for us to recognize by these protocols that there is a prehistory here, that there's a commerce history here, that there's also an exchange that happened here historically that enabled people to own title to these lands, that this wasn't something that was a free and open country, it had to be negotiated, and that majority of the land life on this land was also managed by and thrived under the management of the tribal peoples. The Willamette Valley, of course, had been opened up by burning so that there could be more oak trees, more acorn trees for the primary foods there. So it wasn't just a farmland ready to be tilled. It was actually made that way by the people here so that they could have the primary fruit of those nut trees. So that's just the beginning of the understanding that I have of protocol. And I know that that doesn't accomplish much for you today, but you will be provided with a full document that will describe all of these things through scholarship and also through the, I guess you would call the ancestral or spiritual legacy of the peoples who have made Oregon their home a long time ago and continue to make Oregon their home today. And I also think the Aboriginal peoples that you need to think of are the people who are European American, people who are from other countries who have come here as refugees. And I wanted to make that a special note because I worked at Meyer Memorial Trust and with the Communities of Color Coalition. And I want to make sure that they aren't forgotten in this protocol process as well, that they in turn had their chance to recognize their homelands here too. Thank you. Is there any questions? I guess that's what I should ask.
Colleagues, any questions? Thank you. Appreciate it very much.
I'm not quite done yet, Mayor. I apologize. I was a little late on pressing the unmute button.
No worries. Thank you.
Lastly, I have been asked to read a statement from Terry Cross, enrolled member of the Seneca Nation, founder and senior advisor at National Indian Child Welfare Association, who is also a member of the Community Budget Advisory Board for the city. And each of you have recently heard from him and his great contributions that he made during the fall bump. I'll go ahead and read his email now. He was unable to make it today. This is a comprehensive and well-crafted resolution. As I opened it, I was expecting the usual token nod to acknowledge our peoples and our history, but was pleased and deeply moved to find a resolution that has real merit. I must admit that I didn't think that I would ever see such a document directing such a shift in city policy. It is a good balance of broad foundational statements and specific nuts and bolt actions. It seems unusually detailed for a resolution, but in this case, I commend the specificity. I am sure that many people will buy into the general idea, but without the details, not know what to do differently. Many will resist, some may criticize, but it is the right thing to do, and there is no time like the present. I do have one suggestion. The language that reads, "Be it further resolved, the City Attorney's Office is directed to partner with Portland Parks and Recreation and the Tribal Relations Director to explore options for park fee waivers." I understand that there are likely legal barriers to specific language in this document. I understand that there are likely barriers to accomplish this, but the matter is at the heart of making the resolution real to the Native people of the city, region, and to tribal governments. At one time, it was illegal for Native people to enter the city of Portland. The penalty for an American Indian male found in Portland was public castration. Dr. McLaughlin, one of Oregon's revered founders, earned a reputation for this cruel act. There are many other historical incidents and practices that could be recalled, but the essence of the issue is that no Indigenous person or group that wants to use city-owned land for tribal gatherings or ceremonies should have to pay. I think this language gives broad flexibility to figure out an implementation strategy while being more decisive about actually doing it rather than just exploring it. The mechanism might not be a waiver. For example, it might be a dedicated sponsorship fund, or it might be an intergovernmental agreement with local tribes who then could extend their granted use to urban groups via resolution. These are just some of the possible solutions. The important part is that the resolution empowers a solution to an immediate problem that has confronted the Portland Native community for decades. Thank you for this opportunity to give my feedback. Once again, I want to commend your work and the work of your staff in making this possible. That concludes our presentation. Thank you to our guest speakers, and Mayor, I'd like to hand it back to you.
Thank you very much, Director John. Colleagues, any questions? That was a great presentation. I appreciated it.
I have one question. Excuse me, Laura. Do we need to amend the resolution to accomplish what Terry Cross recommended, or can we take that as legislative intent?
Cynthia, I think that's a good question for Cynthia. I believe that it's been updated.
Yeah, that's correct, Commissioner. We did update the substitute resolution, does have that language, and we did consult with the city attorney's office. So there was one minor addition that was recommended. So that is currently in the resolution.
Great, thank you.
Very good. Any further questions on this item? Any public testimony on this, Keelan?
I'm not, a couple people signed up, but I'm not showing that they're on the call right now.
Can you just read their names just in case they are?
Yes, we had Crystal Bell, Markeisha Smith, Mary Jerome Kelly, and Edward Fritz signed up for this item.
Okay, and I do not see any of those individuals either. Very good, this is a resolution. Please call the roll.
Fritz.
Oh, there are so many people for me to thank. I thank the people who lived on this land and stewarded. Elizabeth Woody said that the tradition is to ask permission when coming on someone's land, and my ancestors did not do that. My ancestors, and I'm a recent immigrant from England, my ancestors took this land by force. They committed genocide, and I am so sorry for how that worked and for how that didn't work for the native peoples who had looked after this land for so many decades and so many centuries. It's been an honor to work with Laura John and with the tribal leaders who, when we established the tribal recognition program in 2011, the tribal government leaders have been so open to trusting a white woman to finally be wanting to do the right thing. And I really appreciate their willingness to do that, because it would be very understandable if they never wanted to talk to somebody who talks like I do or looks like I do ever again. And they were gracious. So thank you to the Native peoples who have tuned in today. You set an example for all of us that we can move on from some terrible things and work together to do better things. Thank you, Cynthia Castro and Laura John, for your thoughtful, respectful approach to leading this process. You know, we didn't just tokenize, figure out who are some names we could put in a resolution. You're really doing it carefully and indeed paying Indigenous peoples to do the research to make sure that we are being respectful not only of the tribes and the bands that are in some acknowledgements that are being used today, but recognizing that there are treaties, as you mentioned, there are federal treaties that it is my responsibility to, and every member of the council's responsibility to make sure that those treaties are honored. And so we need to be respectful to the tribes that we have treaties with and learn how to do better. We did a land exchange in the Bull Run watershed with the Water Bureau. And although we did what at the time we thought was the right way to do the federal consultation, we didn't do it very well. And so now we are working with the Confederated Tribes of the Grand Ronde, the Confederated Tribes, the Warm Springs and others to make sure that when the filtration plant is built, that we do it better. So again, thank you for allowing us all the grace to learn from our mistakes and to make amends for them. Thank you very much to the City Work Group and the regional partners. Thank you, Elizabeth Woody. Your words were so beautiful. And I'm just so thankful that you and the partners on your team are going to write our land acknowledgement, so it will be beautiful as well as accurate and as well as meaningful. So thank you for agreeing to do that. Thank you, David, for sharing your perspective of land acknowledgement. I'm just thrilled with this. Thank you, Terry Cross, for sending in comments. But the leaders who reviewed the resolution and helped us strengthen it are Terry Cross, as was mentioned, Zayadam Edmo, the executive director of the Mackenzie River Gathering Foundation, Lisa Watt, the EcoTrust director of Indigenous Affairs, and Theodon Val Alst, the professor and chair of Portland State University's Indigenous Nations Studies. Our government institutions have been responsible for the death, injustice, pain, loss of land, loss of income, disparities that we see in our community today. And it's our responsibility to make amends for them. This resolution shows that we are serious about that. We have made a bit of progress, and we have centuries of abuse to make up for and to correct our ways. And colleagues, we better do it pretty darn quick, because the people who have been impacted cannot wait another long time for us to get that. I send it on to the Future Council knowing that you will do that, and I'm very pleased to vote aye.
Ryan.
Excuse me, good afternoon, and thank you, Commissioner Fritz. This is the beginning of a special afternoon session. And following you and your heartfelt comments have me a little off script here. I also want to acknowledge Director Laura John. It's always a pleasure to have you on the dais virtually. And Cynthia Castro, really good work. And the special guest speakers, Elizabeth Woody and David Granfield, and virtually Terry Cross. All of your comments were very important to listen to. I've been involved in, let's just say, knowing that we're supposed to do a land acknowledgement at an event, and was guilty of feeling like it was too transactional in the speed of doing something right, but really wanting better depth of the ritual and the importance of that. And so I actually think taking some time to really on that topic and knowing that we're building a system for capacity is really needed. I'm glad that it took off over the last, I guess, few years you've experienced it, but it needs this type of, it needed to be level set. And so I appreciate the dialogue that we have today specifically on that point. It's something that I've thought about more than I'd like to admit, and why I'm sitting at a benefit wondering if people were listening and if it was, if that was really a process that was sincere. And so I really did, that was my biggest takeaway of the item. Anyway, I just want to say that I really appreciate this resolution. I really look forward to continuing to engage, support, and be humbled by what I will continue to gain in my engagement, in my inclusion in this process. And I look forward to supporting these initiatives coming out of the Tribal Relations Program. I vote aye.
Wheeler.
Well, first of all, let me just say, I've been looking forward to supporting this resolution for a long time. And I want to thank you, Commissioner Fritz. You've been passionate about it and highly engaged. And I obviously want to thank Laura John and Cynthia Castro. Director John, I am really pleased with the work that's been coming out of your office over the last 4 years. I feel like we have made a good faith effort to respect our tribal nations, as well as our local urban Indians and others who have been asking us for years and years and years to see them and hear them and understand them and respect them. And for those who watch Portland City Council, if you've been watching for the last 2 days in a row, it should become painfully clear to everyone that the work of the City Council isn't just about the future. That's where we keep our eyes. When we're thinking about governance and leadership, we look to the future. But if the last 2 days have taught us anything, it's that we cannot be ignorant of the past, and that we have to make intentional efforts to explore the past and hear the record as it was from those who personally or whose families personally experienced that past. And for some of us, that can be a painful and sometimes even a jarring experience. But it's absolutely essential that we do it. And at the end of the day, what this resolution will do with its specific actions around training, around work plans, around commitments, around engagement with the efforts to respect the history of our tribal nations, what it also does is it brings us together through knowledge. And if there's anything the world needs right now, it's knowledge. And it's the willingness and the ability of people to have the frank dialogue and to be able to explore with honesty and transparency both the actions of city government as well as the public at large in our history. Because our history has these undeniable threads to the present. And Commissioner Fritz, you mentioned it the best, I think, when you noted that a lot of the disparities and the inequities that exist today, those are legacy results of the past. And so I want to say the same thing today that I said yesterday in a different context when we were discussing the destruction of the historic Albina neighborhood in Portland, which is that we cannot compensate or make up fully for the past through this action. This can't do this, but this is a firm commitment to partnership, to respect, to a willingness to honestly hear and understand our history so that we can move forward together. And that's what we're doing here through this resolution. So it's very powerful. I know you spent a ton of time working on this. I really appreciate our highly experienced and knowledgeable group of people who are going to help us actually craft the land acknowledgement. I think it's important that we be respectful in that process. And I feel like we picked exactly the right individuals to help us with that. So that's great. And Terry, I'm sorry you couldn't be here today. I know at some point you'll watch this on YouTube or whatever. I love the fact that you are one of those Renaissance men. You are not only really helpful on the bottom line and helping us to understand the impacts of our budget, but you're also helping us with these broader important issues that bring us together as a community. So that's super cool. And I just really respect you and thank you for that. I'm happy to vote aye for this resolution. And I look forward to the work, and I hope we can get most, if not all of it, completed in 2021. Let's make 2021 worthwhile. 2020 was sort of it didn't live up to everybody's expectations. So let's use this as a leveraging point to make 2021 extra special. Thank you all for your support. Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. Awesome send off to you. And this is a resolution, and it is adopted by the Portland City Council today. Thank you. And our next item is 1013.
Authorize the Chief Human Resources Officer to enter an initial 3-year period to provide benefit eligible employees access to fertility and family planning benefits for an amount not to exceed $350,000 over the life of the initial contract.
So on this one, I get a partner with Commissioner Fritz. So I'm really excited about this. Commissioner Fritz and I are co-sponsoring this ordinance, which introduces access to fertility and family planning benefits to city employees. IRS tax codes, this is why you put me first, so I would discuss the IRS tax codes. IRS tax codes restrict health plans from offering inclusive benefits, so utilizing a third-party vendor provides options to support same-sex couples, single parents, and others seeking opportunities through adoption and or surrogacy. This agreement recognizes and begins to address barriers for many of our city employees who are seeking a pathway to parenthood. As a commitment to the city's core values and recognizing the need to support our diverse employee population, expanded access to fertility and family planning benefits is necessary. I want to thank Commissioner Fritz and her staff for their longstanding advocacy and hard work on this policy. Commissioner Fritz, I'm proud to co-sponsor this with you, and I will turn it over to you.
Thank you, Mayor. So it was nearly 18 months ago, Senior Policy Director Claire Adamczyk brought this issue to my attention, which I had not been aware of, despite knowing that Claire had had a given birth while being in my office, who, to my knowledge, is the only member of my staff who has done that. I asked the Bureau of Human Resources and Kathy Bless and the Labor Management Benefits Committee to explore the option to expand pathways to parenting. We strive to be an employer of choice. We strive to attract and retain a diverse, culturally competent, fully engaged workforce providing excellent public services. And we wanted to add to our package of inclusive benefits, which currently include paid sick leave, paid parental leave, including foster and adoptive parents, cognitive behavioral therapy for autism, and transgender healthcare, all things that have happened over the past 12 years. And so Claire Adamczyk worked with the diverse empowered employees of Portland to collect testimony from city staff and with Bureau of Human Resources, who then took this project away. So I'll turn it over to Chief Human Resources Director Kathy Bless.
Actually, Michelle Taylor, the benefits manager, is going to go ahead and give the presentation today. Go ahead, Michelle.
All right. Thank you. Good afternoon. Can you hear me okay?
Yep. Okay. Sound great.
Okay. Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler, Commissioner Fritz, and Commissioner Ryan. My name is Michelle Taylor, and I'm the benefit manager within the Bureau of Human Resources. Today, we're here to talk to you about the Fertility and Family Planning Benefit Ordinance. As Commissioner Fritz stated, this ordinance is the culmination of nearly 2 years of work between Commissioner Fritz's office, staff, and human resources to address the inequitable hurdle employees face while navigating their journey to become parents. We were challenged to think differently and ultimately to do better in our support for our employees. A special thank you goes out to the city employees and affinity group representatives who have graciously shared their very personal journeys with us. You will hear some of these stories and lived experiences today. Human Resources collaborated with the Labor Management Benefit Committee, creating a new subcommittee tasked with reviewing vendors who specialize in fertility and family planning benefits. This subcommittee participated in thoughtful discussions, developed meaningful questions for the competitive bid process, and evaluated the detailed vendor responses. Equity and accessibility were at the forefront of all conversations and considerations because we know outcomes are better when participants seeking services are provided culturally specific care, when LGBTQ+ populations are supported, and when patients receive information in their primary language. This benefit will be administered within the Human Resources Office by benefit staff. A broad communication and education campaign is being developed in anticipation of this benefit beginning no later than July 1 of 2021. We are committed to working with affinity groups, union leadership, and managers and supervisors to ensure information is accessible and timely. I would now like to turn it over to a video shared by Claire Adamczyk, former staff member of Commissioner Fritz. And then after Claire, we'll hear from Seraphie Allen, a leadership member of the city's LGBTQ+ affinity group. Open Signal, would you please start Claire's video?
You have to unmute, we can't hear you. Sorry.
Please unmute. This is a video, so somebody's going to have to unmute Claire and start the mid-video over again, please.
Anti-racist institution. Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners. For the record, my name is Claire Adamczyk, and until October, I worked as Senior Policy Director in Commissioner Fritz's office. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. When the City Council adopted the city's core values earlier this year, it committed to being an anti-racist institution, one that cultivates a sense of belonging, support, and safety in sustaining a diverse, equitable, and inclusive city and workforce. Part of the way an employer demonstrates that it values the whole employee, their health, their well-being, and their life pursuits, is through a robust benefits program. And through recent policies like paid sick leave, paid family leave, and an emphasis on mental health support. The city indicates that it wants employees to take care of themselves so that they are able to bring their whole selves to work. The transgender health care benefits passed in 2011 took the important step of recognizing that a person's ability to embrace their gender identity and expression is medically necessary. For employees who desire to be parents and need some level of outside support, there are a variety of pathways to doing so: fertility treatments, adoption, surrogacy, or fostering. But the current city benefit structure, as well as the federal tax code, approaches the majority of these options as elective, out-of-pocket expenses. And these expenses can make pursuing becoming a parent financially, mentally, and emotionally exhausting, or even an impossibility. Further, the lack of employer coverage has a greater burden on Black, Indigenous, and employees of color, as well as LGBTQIA2S, single, and low-income employees. In leading up to working with the Labor Management Benefits Committee, I reached out to DEEP, the Diverse and Empowered Employees of Portland, to connect with employees who were willing to share their personal journeys toward becoming a parent. Here's a snapshot of three employee experiences. One employee shares, "I am in the midst of undergoing IVF treatment and have been paying for it out of pocket. I've had to make choices about my treatment based solely on cost and not on what may be best medically for me. These choices are heartbreaking. It is my hope that sooner rather than later, the financial barrier that keeps many from receiving the treatment will be removed." And another shared, "When my wife and I approached Kaiser to ask about fertility options, I was immediately denied, both because of my age and also because I had no, quote, history of infertility, therefore not eligible to be covered by insurance. Ironically, I couldn't be considered infertile because by definition, that would have required me having a male partner, trying to get pregnant, failing. This definition did not correctly describe our situation, so we were immediately told to work with a fertility clinic outside of Kaiser at our own cost. As a same-sex couple, we anticipated running into discriminatory hurdles eventually, as it unfortunately comes with the territory. We did not realize, though, this would begin prior to conception." And finally, an employee shared, "I always knew that I wanted a family, but I also wanted a graduate degree, a stable job, and time to pay down my student loan debt first. I thought I was responsible. At 32, when I felt ready to bring a child into this world, I never imagined the years of disappointment, exorbitant medical expenses, painful procedures, and sadness that would come. In struggling with infertility, I have felt a sadness and helplessness greater than I have ever felt in my life. It is a weight on my heart that I feel all day. People who have not struggled with infertility will say, there are so many ways to have a child. I know the sentiment is intended to be helpful and optimistic, but it ignores two fundamental things. Number one, the ability to give birth to a genetic child is something worth grieving. And number two, all of the so-called options are extremely expensive and none of them are guaranteed." These are struggles that city employees carry with them, often privately and painfully. While it's socially acceptable to ask about a pregnant person's due date, celebrate the birth of adoption or adoption of a child, people don't ask or talk about fertility challenges, pregnancy loss, legal concerns, or postpartum depression. This new benefits option focuses on the whole journey of becoming a parent, with supports for any anticipated or unanticipated challenges along the way. I truly hope that the next iteration of this plan in better economic times is that the city consider joining employers like Nike and Intel in subsidizing IVF treatments and expanding adoption and surrogacy assistance. But this is certainly a great start, and as I understand it, it's precedent setting for a public employer in Oregon. Thank you to Kathy Bless, Michelle Taylor, Ashley Grundy, and the Labor Management Benefits Committee members for your commitment to pursuing an equity-centered approach. And thank you to Commissioner Fritz for your enthusiastic and steadfast support, both of family-friendly policies and also of me as a working parent throughout my 6 years on your staff. Finally, thank you to the employees who shared your stories to help inform and improve this work. The timing of this policy is serendipitous. Today is my son's 4th birthday, and he came into the world after a long and winding path to get him here. And it is my deepest hope that through this new benefit, the path will be more navigable, more economical, and more affirming for future City of Portland parents. Thank you.
Okay, we're gonna turn it over to Seraphie.
Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners, for hearing my testimony today. My name is Seraphie Allen, and while I work as a senior policy advisor in Mayor Wheeler's office, and many of you know me in that capacity, I am here today representing the LGBTQ plus and affinity group. And I am also here personally as a city employee who dreams of having a family one day. This year, City Council has supported an LGBTQ analyst position in our Office of Equity and Human Rights, has given direction to strike gendered language from the city code, celebrated Pride and Transgender Day of Visibility, and mourned the losses of our trans and gender non-binary community on Transgender Day of Remembrance. I often hear City Council's desire to be an employer of choice and a desire to attract and sustain a diverse workforce that represents our community. As Claire mentioned, this is as much about LGBTQ access as it is about economic equality. Today's vote gets us one step closer on that road. And I want to celebrate that, and we will. But I also want to give space that we have so much more work to do in supporting our queer community, both city employees and our broader Portland community. I have heard far too many people believe the LGBTQ community is all good since marriage equality passed. I can still be fired in 15 states. We are up to 37 trans murders from anti-transgender violence, most of those who were Black and Latinx trans femmes. And we still see an overrepresentation of queer and BIPOC communities in our housing insecure and homelessness populations. But it's not just these facts that we see. We also see seemingly smaller things. 70% of queer youth reported hearing their families make negative comments about LGBTQ people and constantly having people misgender you. Or, as mentioned previously, the IRS tax code restricts health plans from offering inclusive benefits like this. Just this tax code is the reason why the city is utilizing a third-party vendor to provide more inclusive options for family planning. Recognizing the need to support our diverse employee population, expanded access to fertility and family planning and benefits is necessary, and it's a step towards a stronger employee workforce. In addition to ensuring coverage, we should also strive to ensure our employees have gender-affirming experiences as they plan for a family, and that our providers are creating an inclusive environment for all gender experiences and expressions. This policy today is also a perfect example of a rising tide lifts all boats. When the city seeks to increase access, as Claire was, for the LGBTQ employees, it also has the net effect of supporting more than just LGBTQ identifying employees. As a city employee myself, this policy gives me confidence that the city is willing to help meet my needs holistically. I am grateful to have worked for the City of Portland the last 4 years, and I want to thank Commissioner Fritz and especially Claire Adamsick for their long advocacy and hard work on this policy over the last couple years. I also want to thank Kathy Bless, Chief Human Resources Officer, and Michelle Taylor for your support and engagement with our affinity group over the last couple years as well. Thank you to the City Council for listening to my testimony.
Oh, thank you, Seraphie and Claire, for providing the video. On behalf of Human Resources, I would just like to express our absolute appreciation to you, Commissioner Fritz, and Mayor and Commissioner Ryan, for continued support as we forge a path towards equitable fertility benefits. Thank you for your longstanding commitment to the mental health and well-being of city employees, in addition to the service to all Portlanders. This concludes my remarks, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, any further questions? Do we have public testimony on this item, Keelan?
No one signed up for this item, Mayor.
All right. Well, good. Thank you. This was a great presentation. I appreciate everybody who presented. Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. Would you like to say something before I move this one on?
Oh, yes, I would. I hadn't noticed it was a non-emergency. So I'll say my goodbye, my thank yous now, since I won't get the opportunity to do it in January. I'm so grateful to everybody who participated in this process. I got to attend the Labor Management Benefits Committee in 2009 when I was assigned to be the wellness liaison by Mayor Adams. And I was so impressed with this, the leadership of HR and also all the participation from both labor and management. So our current committee includes Alan Furschweiler, Jamie Dusher, and Rachel Whiteside representing labor, Dave Benson and Ashley Grundy representing management. And thank you, Michelle Taylor, for your committee coordination, Kathy Bless. You've been such a great leader. I'm so glad that you're the Human Resources Director and doing so many great things. And of course, thank you to Claire Adamsick on my staff and all of the employees who were very courageous in pursuing this, because you just never know whether it's going to be embraced. And I'm glad to see that our city government is embracing all of our employees and seeking to meet their needs. So thank you so much, colleagues, for encouraging folks to vote for this in January.
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. Commissioner Ryan.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. And thank you, Commissioner Fritz, for waking me up to the fact that this is a first reading. I thought I would say something briefly when we vote, but because Seraphie's here and it was such a great presentation, I just wanted to give voice to how important this is. I guess as the open queer up here on the dais, it really means a lot to me. I don't talk about this a lot, but in the mid 90s, the beginning of what I call the lesbian baby boom in Seattle, my ex and I were donors, and I basically offered my spouse's, I set it up. And I have two children I'm more like the uncle. They have two really awesome moms, but they're really important in my life. And I don't get to tell that story a lot. And I think it's because we didn't have things like this in motion. So I'm just so grateful to be right here, right now, experiencing such good government for all people. And I'm not surprised, Commissioner Fritz, that you were a champion of this. And I don't know, this meeting's getting quite emotional. I'm just so grateful to be here, and I'm excited that we will be moving this forward to a second reading. And so it becomes a part of our budget and becomes real. So thank you so much for your work, all of you. I stand on your shoulders on this one. Thanks.
Very good. Well, we don't want to spoil the suspense on whether or not this will pass on second reading, but I think you can all rest assured it will. This is a first reading of a non-emergency ordinance. It moves to second reading. Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. Next up is item 1014.
Accept the year 5 bond oversight committee report on the $68 million $2014 Parks General Obligation Bond.
Commissioner Fritz.
I'm really proud of having helped pass this, the bond measure. I'm so grateful to Portland voters for passing it and to the staff who have implemented it. So I will turn it over to staff for this presentation.
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. We should have here with us today Janice Mason from our Bond Oversight Committee. She'll be doing a presentation on the Oversight Committee's findings on the year 5 work of the bond program. And I'm very happy to introduce Janice today. Unfortunately, this is her last presentation with committee, as she will be going off the committee this year. So thank you in advance, Janice, for your service. And with that, Jan, please take it away.
Thank you very much, Robin. Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler, Commissioner Fritz, and Commissioner Ryan. For the record, my name is Janice Mason, and I am a member of the Parks Bond Oversight Committee. The Parks replacement bond was passed by Portland voters in 2014. And I am here today in our virtual meeting to present our annual report to council, which is our fifth year, as mentioned. In your packet is a Bond Oversight Committee annual report. I will not go over it in entirety, but instead we'll share a summary of this report. So the committee was established by the City Council with a core mission to ensure that Portland Parks and Recreation Bureau delivers the bond-funded projects as promised to the voters. Individual City Council members appointed members to the committee to represent the broader Portland community in overseeing the Bureau's delivery of the bond work. The committee members, besides myself, are Zari Santner, Jonas Collin, Karen Loper-Tracy, and Ken Richardson. To carry out this purpose, the committee meets regularly with Parks Bureau staff to discuss and review progress on the 2014 Parks Replacement Bond work. This year, we were able to meet in person on January 7th. And like other Argonians, since the public health crisis began in March, we have not met in person, but have moved entirely to digital and virtual communications through virtual meetings and emails. The committee commends all at the Parks Bureau who, in addition to dealing with the health and economic impacts because of COVID, have also adapted to leadership changes, including the loss of Commissioner Fish, all while ensuring the objectives set forth for this bond were upheld. The Bonds Oversight Committee's focus is to evaluate the efforts of the Parks Bureau with three major objectives in mind. These objectives are: one, adhere to the language of the bond; number two, maintain fiscal accountability; and number three, be transparent with the community in our efforts. So here's a quick overview of our fifth year status with these objectives. Number one, adhere to the language of the bond. An audit of the bond program performance was completed in 2019. Three specific findings were: one, the funds are being spent in a manner that adheres to the language of the measure; two, the program is operating in a fiscally responsible manner; and three, the existing documentation systems are transparent in place and functioning well. By the close of the fifth fiscal year, all 50 approved projects are either underway or complete. A total of 46 projects are complete. Three will be completed shortly, and three are under construction. More than $49 million have been spent through this fifth fiscal year. Number two, maintain fiscal accountability. The committee believes the bond dollars have been clearly and separately traced and have ensured that the integrity and accuracy of financial statements were met. The Parks Bureau remains fiscally accountable of bond dollars with a separate program tracking system accessible to all staff, and the administrative overhead is within the 10% total budget goal. We also want to share the bond construction projects have been awarded to 22% minority and disadvantaged business enterprise, 19% woman and disadvantaged business enterprise, and 5% to emerging small businesses, for a total of 45% of the value construction projects awarded to certified companies. For the professional services related to these bond projects, contracts were awarded to 10% minority or MBE / DBE, 10% for women and disadvantaged business enterprises, and 12% to emerging small business companies, with a total of 31% of professional service contracts to certified companies. Number three, be transparent with the community. The committee believes that the Parks Bureau acted in a way that promotes equity, participation, and accountability. As recommended by the Oversight Committee, the Parks Bureau conducted a survey to measure the bonds program's openness and transparency. The community feedback informed the community outreach activities and included increasing social media posts. In conclusion, the Oversight Bond Committee feels that the Portland Parks and Recreation Bureau have completed the objectives and promises made to the voters. We recommend a final performance audit occur after all the projects have been completed. As Robin mentioned, my term ends at this report for this committee, and I'd like to thank the council, but particularly Commissioner Amanda Fritz, for your support in these important community projects, which we hope we'll all be able to enjoy more fully. And after the final projects are completed, and hopefully all of the public will simultaneously be able to enjoy our city parks. I'm happy to take any questions.
Commissioner Ryan, you have your hand up, but I think that's old. Is that correct? Okay. Great. Thank you. And thank you for your service, Janice. We really appreciate it. Thanks for everything you've done.
You're welcome, Mayor. Thank you.
All right. This is a report.
I move to accept the report.
Second.
All right, Commissioner Fritz moves the report. Commissioner Ryan seconds the report. Keelan, please call the roll.
Fritz.
Well, thank you, Janice, for your report, and thank you for your service. I've been very honored that you were my representative on the bond committee, and I thank you and your colleagues, Jonas Colon, Karen Loper-Tracy, and Richardson, and Zari Santner. So the next council, whoever's the next parks commissioner, will be able to bring forward some nominations to replace you for the final year. Although there is no replacing you, Janice, there's just a succeeding from you. So thank you so much for that. Thank you to Robin Laughlin and your team with Lauren McGuire and others. That would be Gary Datka, Jill Hutchinson, Marlo Medlin, Evan Callahan, Robin Cage, and Susan Miamba. And I also appreciate the work of the engagement staff at Portland Parks and Recreation, particularly Maya Spencer and her team. Many of the projects were informed by Urban Forestry, Jen Cairo and their team. Thank you, Director Adina Long. Thanks to previous interim director, Kelly Chiaselli, who was also the asset manager. This has truly been a team effort, and I am really thrilled to be able to go to open spaces where there's beautiful stuff that we got done together and that will last for a long time. So thanks again to the voters of Portland for making all of this happen. One more thing. I want to thank Pooja Bhatt and Christian Nieves and Tim Crail, who are my parks liaisons. Thank you. Aye.
Ryan.
Yes, thank you. I want to also acknowledge that terrific report, Ms. Mason, and I'm not surprised to hear that your committee all saw that there was adherence to the big three around bond language, but of course around fiscal accountability and transparency. If I'm remembering well, it was the combination of the late Commissioner Fish and Commissioner Fritz, the combination of Fitz and Fritz that really make sure that such things as transparency and accountability are definitely part of their values. So anyway, it's great. There's no accident why the voters once again approved the most recent levy. You've all just done really good work to build that trust with the voters. I vote aye.
Wheeler.
Thank you to the Oversight Committee members, the Parks Bureau team, and of course, Commissioner Fritz, for the careful attention to the performance of these dollars and for what I thought was a really outstanding presentation today. During a period of what could politely be described as very challenging headwinds, you have collectively ensured that the work continued, that the dollars went out the door, and that the community saw its parks and recreation system getting better. I'm very grateful for your commitment to this and proud of our community for continuing to invest in our park system, even when the community is struggling financially. The levy voters recently approved will bring additional resources to our park system, and the future of these critical community spaces, I believe, is bright. Commissioner Fritz, you and Commissioner Fish took turns with the Parks Bureau over your time in office, and I've been very appreciative of the partnership that you showed over the years. You built on each other's good work. You made sure to carry these shared priorities forward. And today we have a bond, a levy, an incredibly strong director, and a leadership team at the Bureau that's taking us to a really exciting future. There's a lot more here to be excited about too. Thank you for your many years of commitment to our Parks and Recreation team, to all of you. Thank you. I vote aye. The report is accepted. Thank you. And last but not least, item 1015.
Recognize city progress toward core values over the past decade.
Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, and I appreciate all three of us co-sponsoring this item. We haven't done this at the end of a year that I can remember that we've been here. And I think it's really important, and especially at the end of a decade, to recognize that while we still have a lot of work to do to achieve our core values and to make our community work better for everybody, we have made progress. And so I'm really appreciative that we're taking the time to do that today. And we'll turn it over to the staff who are going to run through the presentations. And I think we're going to start by showing a video. Yeah, so the Office of Equity and Human Rights has created a video which captures the essence of what we're going to be talking about. So we'll just play that.
Equity has never been more important than now. And we want you to know that our team is leading this work citywide. There is so much more to do to lead systemic change, but it's important to note the successes along the way.
Black Lives Matter! 2020, in the midst of a global pandemic, Portlanders joined community members across the United States to support Black Lives and protest the May 25th police killing of George Floyd.
Good. Colleagues, we're in a moment of reckoning, obviously. For years, Portland's Black, Indigenous, and communities of color have demanded justice. And since the death of George Floyd, countless others have joined that call as well, reaching out to my office demanding both accountability and change.
On June 17th, 2020, Portland City Council adopted a resolution making anti-racism, equity, transparency, communication, collaboration, and fiscal responsibility, the core values of the City of Portland, and designated Juneteenth as a day of remembrance and city holiday. While the listing and formal adoption of the values were done in 2020, city bureaus, with the guidance of the Office of Equity and Human Rights, have been developing and implementing equity and anti-racism strategies for years. The origin of the Office of Equity begins with community.
There were a couple of very powerful reports that came out from the Coalition of Communities of Color, where folks got together and worked with PSU to say really how are communities of color faring in Multnomah County. And the results were pretty devastating. There were terrible disparities.
And so after the Coalition's publication, I went upstairs to Sam Adams and I said, we're not just going to put these on the shelf, right? Because we had that presentation at council and I was really concerned that we'd say, oh, this is terrible. Somebody should do something about this. So I went and talked to Sam and we then and there decided we're going to do something about this. And we're going to listen to the community to figure out what that's going to be. But it was, I think, 32 community leaders for the most part, some city staff, but many, many community leaders, both communities of color and people from a lot of different leadership positions. And they said, city needs to put its house in order. So that's what we did. That's what the Office of Equity and Human Rights was set up with.
You know, it was very controversial when it first came before council. It was not a slam dunk, but I was persuaded it was time. Commissioner Fritz made a very compelling argument, and as did the community members who came before us.
Created by City Council resolution in 2011 and beginning operations in 2012, The office influenced significant changes in its first year, assisted in the creation of Procurement Services Pre-Qualification Board to provide greater equity in contracting opportunities, collaborated with Bureau of Human Resources on the city's resolution as a model employer of people with disabilities, staffed the Human Rights Commission and Portland Commission on Disability, coordinated the requirement that all online city videos must be captioned. Eventually, thanks to Portland Commission on Disability members, the Oregon Association of the Deaf, and other community partners, and the leadership of Commissioner Amanda Fritz, City Council voted to make the display of closed captioning mandatory on all public televisions, established a Racial Equity 101 education program. Between 2012 and 2015, over 2,000 city staff from 24 bureaus received equity-related training, and almost 500 community members participated as well. By 2015, the training became mandatory for all city staff and elected officials. Created the Budget Equity Assessment Tool, which has evolved over the years, becoming mandatory for citywide use in 2016, and eventually embedded throughout the city budget preparation process in 2018.
I wanted to make it very clear when I became mayor that equity was going to be one of the key determinants of our budget process. We were going to make sure that equity was front and center. And so the equity engagement tool that we actually use during the budget process makes sure that's the case. And in fact, the director of the Office of Equity and Human Rights sits at the table right alongside the budgeting team when we're making decisions about the budget.
In 2013, City Council adopted the Civil Rights Title VI plan, committing the city to compliance and establishing roles for the Office of Equity and Human Rights. Council also reaffirmed previous city policies to comply with Title II of the Americans with Disabilities Act.
Civil Rights Title VI and ADA Title II basically say that no person in the United States on the grounds of race, color, national origin, or disability can be excluded from participation and denied the benefits of or subject to discrimination under any program, service, or activity of a government. Our approach to civil rights is actually vastly different than a lot of other jurisdictions. And this means that we kind of look beyond compliance. We've seen that when you look at the implementing regulations of civil rights and you look at equity best practices, they're kind of one and the same. So we really focus on the outcomes and the results of our government services and government impacts, and we focus on those.
Nicole Sharon has given policy guidance to city officials for over 12 years and oversees the city's ADA Title II and Disability Equity Program at the Office of Equity. She has influenced many innovative policies that make the city a more inclusive community for people with disabilities.
Some of the changes that have happened in Portland are things like an adaptive bike program. We're one of very few cities that are major cities that have a adaptive bike program.
The Office of Equity and Human Rights co-hosted the Governing for Racial Equity Conference in 2014, partnering with the Multnomah County Office of Diversity and Equity, King County Equity and Social Justice, City of Seattle Race and Social Justice Initiative, and San Francisco Human Rights Commission. Originally planned as a regional event for government employees and elected officials, the conference attracted over 450 participants from the Pacific Northwest, but jurisdictions in New York, Minnesota, Massachusetts, Iowa, Wisconsin, California, and Virginia as well. In 2014, the Office of Equity completed the ADA Title II Transition Plan Report, which requires city bureaus to reasonably modify policies and procedures and provide aids and services to accommodate persons with disabilities. In the summer of 2015, City Council unanimously adopted the citywide racial equity goals and strategies as binding city policy. The office developed the goals in partnership with jurisdictions from around the country who are collectively identifying best practices to achieving racial equity. Equity goal number one: we will end racial disparities within city government so there is fairness in hiring and promotions, greater opportunities in contracting, and equitable services to all residents. Number two, we will strengthen outreach, public engagement, and access to city services for communities of color and immigrant and refugee communities, and support or change existing services using racial equity best practices. Number three, we will collaborate with communities and institutions to eliminate racial inequity in all areas of government, including education, criminal justice, environmental justice, health, housing, transportation, and economic success.
I can vividly recount the various challenges.
Informed by a resolution from the United States Conference of Mayors and a two-year process of community engagement and visioning, the City of Portland launched Black Male Achievement in 2015. The program is steered by a committee of Black men, with subcommittees focusing on education, employment, the justice system, and family stability. C.J. Robbins leads the program for the Office of Equity and says that the purpose of Black Male Achievement is to improve life outcomes for Black men and boys.
Ultimately, people are looking to be regarded as, and this is a quote, whole and complicated beings. We want to be seen as we are. We want to be felt and heard as we are and understood as we are and still have room to grow. And ultimately, I think when we look at an equity movement, when we look at something like Black Male Achievement, we should be looking for opportunities for people to be and not just be good or bad, not just be great or horrible, but to be. And within that, we'll find humanity. And within that humanity, that's where equity really lives. And that's this work. That's what BMA is all about.
In 2015, the Office of Equity started shepherding all city bureaus through the process of creating five-year racial equity plans that operationalize or bring to life the city's racial equity goals and strategies. By administrative rule, all bureaus were charged with completing their initial equity plan drafts by late 2016.
It was a very broad-based effort. It was produced by a combination of line staff and managers, and quite frankly, worked really hard on it and brought an incredible amount of passion to the work.
By the end of 2015, many larger bureaus had hired equity managers to guide their work. The first such positions were created by Commissioner Amanda Fritz for the bureaus in her portfolio. Without the advocacy and support of the Office of Equity and Human Rights, senior staff-level positions such as these might not have become a reality. The Office of Equity elevated its citywide education program, offering results-based accountability training for racial equity. The office contracted consultants to deliver training to city staff, city council, and emergency coordination staff. And there is more to come in the future. In 2019, the Office of Equity and Human Rights developed its equity stance. Equity addresses the historic institutional systems that create oppression based on identity. We strive to use an intersectional approach to transform historic power dynamics for accountable systemic change based on the principles of humanity, justice, and belonging. The City of Portland leads with race and disability. As the Office of Equity and Human Rights helped build the foundation of equity in the city, the momentum was impossible to ignore. And as the city moved toward 2020, facing a global pandemic and an explosive tipping point in the fight for racial justice, equity had already been institutionalized in many policies and practices. In March 2020, Mayor Ted Wheeler declared a state of emergency as the COVID-19 pandemic progressed in the region. The city established an Emergency Coordination Center, or ECC, as its hub for the city's response activities. For the first time in our city's history, the ECC included an equity officer on the incident command staff and an equity and accessibility manager in the ECC's Joint Information Center. Dr. Markeisha Smith, director of the Office of Equity, says that by embedding equity subject matter experts at the start, the city has been able to provide support and vital messaging to disenfranchised communities.
As a result of our language access guidance, public health messaging is being delivered to communities in over 30 languages in various print and video media. In collaboration with equity managers, we produced a COVID-19 equity relief and recovery toolkit that guides the ECC's work, as well as language access guidance and an effective communications guide that informs the accessibility of the ECC's communication to community members with disabilities.
The pandemic has not hampered the Office of Equity and Human Rights momentum in moving equity forward in the city. On November 12th, the city's equity and language access analyst, Tatiana Elahalde, brought a resolution to City Council to establish the city's language access policy. On November 18th, Nicole Sharon and Jonathan Simeone, brought the citywide disability equity goals to council for adoption. These are just a few highlights of the Office of Equity's work over the years. The office has many more accomplishments and responsibilities, like supporting the Diverse and Empowered Employees of Portland Affinity Group Program, or DEEP. There is so much more work to do to address the historic institutional systems that create oppression based on identity. But as Dr. Markeisha Smith says, it's important to note the successes along the way.
This community is unsustainable if we don't have everybody succeed. And so that's, I think, essential work that I'm really proud of having helped start, committed to continuing to support as long as I'm in office and as long as I'm alive.
And I want to relentlessly hold people's feet to the fire here in the city to achieve the goals that we've set for the city. And if we do that, everybody wins. Everybody wins. We have a more diverse, better equipped, more experienced workforce, more connected to the community with greater opportunities for people in our community. It's a win-win-win. And I think we've made some important first steps, and I look forward to the next chapter.
Okay, I think it's turned over to me. So Markeisha Smith, Director for our Office of Equity and Human Rights, and super proud of that video. So the late, great poet laureate Maya Angelou said, "You can't really know where you're going until you know where you've been." The opportunity to reflect on the work of the Office of Equity and Human Rights has been humbling and energizing. The opportunity to acknowledge the role that Commissioner Amanda Fritz has played in the establishment and sustainability of the office is an honor. The resolution before us today provides a pathway to the next phase in the journey of equitable policies, practices, procedures, and outcomes across the city of Portland. This resolution highlights that given the firm foundation that has been planted, we have the critical task of continuing to grow and nurture the work of equity so that the product is something we never imagined in our wildest dreams. Equity requires transformation, not transaction. Equity requires that we not dance around the edges of reality, but position ourselves in the middle of the dance floor, even if we fear we haven't learned all the steps. Equity is a removal of fear and an activation of faith for communities that historically and currently have no trust in our system. The past actions of this Portland City Council with Commissioner Amanda Fritz providing voice and leadership demonstrates that we have what it takes to transition into transformation if we stay the course. And while we often witness equity manifesting itself in the way we transform our practices, if it is layered on top of the soil of racism and anti-Blackness, it means nothing. The truth of who we are as a country, as a city, is painful. It ain't pretty. And 2020 has been the year of racial reckoning. As this resolution reflects on the past and the ways in which we are living into our core city values, we cannot forget that the path to becoming an anti-racist organization is not short or quick. It is arduous and messy. It is my hope and what Commissioner Fritz is bringing before us today that it motivates us to keep going, even in the face of obstacles, and to remember to celebrate the shifts, positive, small, and big, along the way. Thank you. And now I'll pass it to Tom Reinhart.
Thanks, Dr. Smith. Good afternoon, Mayor, City Council. My name is Tom Reinhart. I'm proud to be the city's Chief Administrative Officer. Commissioner Fritz, thank you for the invitation to be here today, and thank you for all of your years of dedicated service to Portland. While we will always need to work hard to adhere to the core values described in the video so well, and we will always have to work to improve, I am proud of the city's results in promoting these values over the last several years. The council's consistent focus on these values and the questions consistently asked of me and many others in our individual check-ins as directors were instrumental and clearly a part of this transformation. Specifically, I want to use my couple minutes to lift up several notable ways our core values have guided us over the last several years. So we can talk about how this has really made a big difference and will continue to make a big difference. One of our collective goals as a city is to ensure that city staff reflect the demographics of the community. In 2011, 19.7% of our employees identified as people of color. In December 2020, 25.9, nearly 26% of city employees identified as people of color. While this still doesn't reflect the demographics of Portland's communities, we are improving in attracting, retaining, and promoting a diverse workforce. Some bureaus have made more progress, and I want to call out this example in Portland Parks and Recreation, which increased full-time employees who are people of color from 17% in 2014 to 29% in 2019. I want to make it clear that if we look at the demographics of Portland Public Schools, we are going to have to continue to do much better as an organization, but we are on the way, and these core values have been a big part of that. From 2011 to 2020, the percentage of hours worked by men of color on city capital projects or construction projects has increased from 20% to 29%. Hours worked by women of color increased from 2.3% to 2.8%, and hours worked by white women from 3.9% to 5.3%. Again, progress, but a long way to go. From 2011 to 2020, our two-year total percentage of subcontracts in construction awarded to firms owned by people of color increased from 15.3% to 28.5%. For firms owned by women, it increased from 9.2% to 25.2%. These are just a few data points showing that when an organization as large as ours makes a powerful commitment, makes that commitment clear that it does make a difference. The effort across the organization to actualize the values that were beautifully illustrated in the video is evident in so many initiatives. I just want to name a few before I pass it on, the presentation. The work to develop and implement our 311 program with the basis of universal design that it should be easily accessible to all Portlanders is a tremendous example of these values in work, particularly equity and collaboration. The Build Portland Infrastructure Initiative not only is about fiscal responsibility, but also targeting areas of our community that have not had infrastructure investment. The liftoff of the City Arts Program focused on anti-racism and equity in terms of the dollars the city invests in arts with our partners across the city is a good example of what we're doing with our core values. The recent work that the council did with our team and the Office of Management and Finance to impanel the Charter Review Commission, I think, is a wonderful example of how the city has evolved in this area. If you just look at the composition of that commission, we have made tremendous strides in anti-racism and collaboration in this area. The CARES Act local relief funds, the $114 million that we are just finishing up distributing throughout the community, again, we're guided by the core values that a city council has directed us to follow in all our work. So Mayor, Council, and a special thank you to Commissioner Fritz. This is paying off, and we look forward to working with you to build on this foundation. Now I'm happy to turn over the presentation to Chief Human Resource Officer Kathy Bless.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Commissioner Fritz, for this opportunity to further recognize city progress toward core values over the past decade. My comments this afternoon will be primarily related to wellness, sick and other paid leaves, and healthcare coverage. One of the very first common goals Commissioner Fritz and I worked together on was to implement comprehensive coverage that cared for children diagnosed within the autism spectrum. Other coverage supported through benefits during your time, Commissioner Fritz, was to include and support transgender coverage, marriage equality, and the newly adopted Path to Parenthood ordinance passed today. Wellness was another area in which we have made significant advancement with the implementation of the Healthy Foundations program, supporting employees and their family members with chronic health conditions, and improving quality of life and health for hundreds of health plan participants. We implemented the Preventive Care Initiative, partnering with labor to promote routine care, ensuring employees catch chronic conditions early through diagnostic testing. We created free and easy access to outpatient mental health benefits within our EAP program and also within our healthcare coverage, and made inpatient mental health and chemical dependency treatments affordable. During your tenure, Commissioner Fritz, we supported the most vulnerable employees through paid sick leave, even before the state required it. We implemented 6 weeks of paid parental leave to ensure employees had paid time to spend with their new child. And we implemented a short-term disability program helping to stabilize income for employees experiencing acute health events. Last but not least, BHR established a disability resource and employment specialist to manage and grow the city's disability employment program, which includes the development of equitable workforce systems, supporting an inclusive workforce culture, managing recruitment, data collection, and analysis. We also now have a fund to help support bureaus provide accommodations to new and existing employees. I am so proud to continue this advocacy and am also proud to have worked alongside you, Commissioner. I will now introduce Elizabeth Edwards.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the introduction, Kathy. My name is Elizabeth Edwards. I'm the Director of the Office of Government Relations, and it is my great privilege to have just a few minutes this afternoon to do a quick look back and share what government relations progress has looked like toward the city's core values over the last 10 years. And a special thank you to Commissioner Fritz for this opportunity. I have my lucky zebra mug in your honor today. 10 years ago, we were exclusively a lobbying shop, and now we have regional, state, federal, tribal, and international relations programs. And creating and expanding a comprehensive tribal relations program has been one of the most transformational things for our office and for the city as well. I know that council was hearing about the work of the land acknowledgement process just before this. I think that's a fantastic example of the partnerships that the program has built in the community and with tribes and the sea change that is happening within the city. We've also had fantastic cross-program collaboration, like when our international and tribal programs encouraged and helped to coordinate a cultural exchange between the indigenous Ainu people from our sister city in Sapporo, Japan, with some artists and artisans from Northwest tribes here in Oregon. And, you know, I would be remiss if I didn't touch on some of our advocacy efforts as well, because we continue to have a strong lobbying presence too. Thank you to Kathy for mentioning some of the items that we've partnered on with HR in the past. We've also worked on increasing affordable housing opportunities by securing a referral of a constitutional amendment that authorized the city to leverage affordable housing bonds with other funds. We've improved police accountability by passing legislation that allows for consistent standards for police officer accountability and the disciplinary actions assigned by the chief of police. And we've passed numerous bills to improve transportation safety. Commissioner, I've worked with one of them, one very meaningful one with you. And we've had a number that are especially looking at traditionally underserved communities. And another one that I'm very proud of is a $110 million appropriation to improve Outer Powell Boulevard and make those critical safety improvements that have been long overdue. We've also partnered with the Office of Neighborhood Involvement when it was the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, and with Commissioner Fritz's office on community education and input sessions via our Advocacy 101 event. And this past year, we worked to explicitly center racial and disability equity in our state and federal advocacy and share our commitment to repairing past harms through our lobbying. And because I'm about to turn it over to Director Kennard with the Budget Office, I also want to say how proud I am of the partnerships we've developed with both the Office of Equity and Human Rights and the City Budget Office to create a small bureau equity manager to really help advance equity work in small and internal service bureaus. So with that, I'll turn it over to Director Kennard. Thank you.
Thank you, Elizabeth Edwards. Good afternoon, Mayor and Council, and thank you also to Commissioner Fritz for inviting me to contribute to this conversation. Thank you also for your leadership, your dedicated support of our office, and your strong fiscal stewardship during your tenure. My name is Jessica Kennard, and I'm the City's Budget Director. In 2012, Council authorized the creation of the City Budget Office as an independent bureau, recognizing the need for the mayor and council to have direct access to objective analysis and information irrespective of bureau portfolios. Since then, the City Budget Office has provided and made publicly available financial analyses on over 1,000 council decision points each year. To foster fiscal or financial responsibility, council has approved several changes to binding city financial policy since CBO's founding. Chief among these was the creation of the capital set-aside policy in 2015, which has led to over $65 million in increased investments for critical and urgent major maintenance backlog projects, including providing essential traffic signal and system replacements and upgrades, providing for uninterrupted power supply at the 911 call center and the Justice Center, replacing roofs at parks community centers, providing millions of dollars to help ensure all city corners are ADA compliant, and replacing and repairing culverts and bridges in Forest Park, among many other projects. The city's compliance with our strong financial policies is a critical reason why we are one of only 8% of cities with the highest AAA bond rating, allowing us to get the lowest rates when borrowing. Since its creation, the City Budget Office has promoted transparency by making all budget information from bureaus and analyses publicly available, by readily answering questions from the public and the media, and holding budget trainings for city staff and community groups. The city's move towards program offer budgeting under the direction of Mayor Wheeler also provides budget information in a much more publicly accessible way. In 2015, Council established the Portland Utility Board, a CBO-supported community volunteer board providing valuable insight, guidance, and recommendations to the Portland Water Bureau, the Bureau of Environmental Services, and Council. The Council has also furthered accountability by supporting the Budget Office's citywide performance management function. Through this function, CBO has helped the city expand the use of data and evidence in decision-making and key processes, including by partnering with the What Works Cities initiative, for which the city recently achieved certification honor roll. Finally, Council has furthered equity by supporting the budget equity assessment tool, which has served as a model for jurisdictions across the country in helping to integrate an equity lens in public budgeting, by ensuring the inclusion of the OEHR director in all council budget conversations, and by supporting the development of the 2019 Portland Insights Survey, a revamped community survey which included new and enhanced strategies to make sure we included the voices of historically underrepresented communities. It has been an incredible decade of growth and change for our city, and in this moment where we are acutely aware of the need to do more, I am also thankful and humbled by the ability to participate in this acknowledgement of the many achievements we as a city have made to date. I'm looking forward to helping achieve more notable milestones in the future. And with that, I will turn it back over to Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you very much, Jessica, and thank you to everybody who participated. Hang on a second, I've got to give me a moment, please. There we go. So I'm going to go back to the beginning with the video, with the tribute to Commissioner Nick Fish. I know that his family are watching this presentation, and I want to thank them for all that Nick achieved. So for a lot of the last decade, Commissioner Fish, Commissioner Dan Saltzman, and I were the three constant members. And we were led by three strong mayors in Mayor Adams, Mayor Hales, and Mayor Wheeler. And it takes all of us working together and somebody coordinating to be able to do this. I certainly appreciate all of the bureau directors that I've had the privilege to work with, either directly as commissioner in charge or as listening to them and knowing that they're doing a good job regardless of who their commissioner is. So with that, just thank you all. And I do encourage those watching to look up the resolution online. It's been so fun over the past couple of weeks to get bureaus contributing factual data. This is not, there's a lot of objective statistics about what progress we have made and what things we have done. I did invite Rebecca Esau from the Bureau of Development Services to present. They certainly have had a tumultuous decade and have made much progress, particularly in technology. And I think the city as a whole has made a lot of progress in technology from the successful implementation of the VersaTerm computer at the Bureau of Emergency Communications, through getting the permitting system online and multiple other, including the Open and Accountable Elections Program technology that was developed largely by volunteers. So I do believe that the Open and Accountable Elections Program sets up the city and the council to be much more open, transparent, anti-racism, accountable, and fiscally responsible by the kinds of people who will get elected, including my new colleague, Commissioner Ryan, who it's been such a joy and privilege to work with for just a few months in September. Many other thank yous, but I'm just really pleased that we were able to do this, and I'd be happy to open it to my colleagues for comments. Actually, it's the resolution, right? We have public testimony.
Indeed, we do. Should we do that next?
Sure.
All righty. Keelan, do we have people signed up for public testimony on this item?
Yes, Mayor. We have 4 people signed up.
Very good.
First up, we have Mary Helen Kincaid.
Welcome.
Okay, I unmuted myself. I don't know if you can hear me.
Yep, you sound
okay.
Great.
You're nodding. This is my first experience testifying on a screen. I've been in council before, and my adventure in city government began with getting to know Amanda. It's been a pleasure. It was really exciting to hear all that you did, but I wanted to add a couple things that I think were phenomenal that she did in the neighborhoods. I live in the East Columbia neighborhood near Columbia Boulevard and Northeast 13th along Marine Drive. She became involved. The biggest event is with our East Columbia neighborhood picnic. She was always there. She was helping set up tents and serve food. And one time after my husband had surgery, I had to be at a Port of Portland event, and she said, just go on, I'll take care of him. I'm a nurse. So he just thought that was the greatest thing, that a city council person was paying attention to him. That led to a connection with her marching in veterans parades, and he's a 22-year Navy veteran, and he had a couple of his friends, and they looked forward to November 11th every year so that they could march with Amanda in the vets, and he actually gave her a good service medal that she could wear as an honorary pin that she was like part of the Navy. She marched in the St. John's parade, and I was amazed because she marched in high heels and I was like dead after a mile in my Nikes. She helped with any number of issues, but I think the biggest thing in my neighborhood is that she championed a ADA path in the Children's Arboretum, which is one of only 2 arboretums in the city. And it had a dirt path, and people with mobility devices or strollers could not access the park. And it's been 7 long years, but they're going to dig dirt next year, and Amanda's going to be there to like cut the ribbon on the path. It's amazing. The other part, I noticed someone had a zebra mug, and I'm not on a picture, but I have my little zebra statue that's been kind of a mantra since I was a kid. I was always fascinated with zebras because they were really different. And I think that that really spoke to some kind of connection with Amanda, because she represented so many different people, so many different things. And one of the highlights of my life, it's actually written in a book somewhere, was riding in the zebra car that she would bring to parades. So, and I have a picture of me waving, and people said, what in the world? But that kind of spirit, I think, has led many neighborhoods to praise her. I think somewhere on this call is Dereed Hyde-Toll, who was a longtime supporter. She had a neighbor go and help her get signed up. She's 88 years old. Doesn't like email, but I think she's on the call, so I want to recognize her attendance. And I know she's Amanda had special connection with her and her husband over the parks and the furtherance, and was instrumental in encouraging them to keep up their work. Back to the zebra, there's a zebra inside of one of 2 Western Reds. Am I done? Oh, one of 2 Western red cedar trees. The Arboretum has a tree planted in Amanda's husband's honor. And one of the first things she said is, I want a tree for me planted next to him. Tell you one last anecdotal story. It took forever to get through Parks bureaucracy to try and get those trees planted. So I finally walked up to Parks Director Mike Abadi at a meeting I was at and said, we're going to plant those trees. You've got 24 hours to say, okay, but I'm going to plant them. And if you don't want them there, you go dig them up and you tell Amanda. And he said, oh, I'd never do that. So there's two trees. They're doing really well. And the little zebra's still in the tree after 4 or 5 years. A zebra is a really unique connotation, I think, or comparison to Amanda's personality. Steadfast, doesn't care what gets in their way, wants to get those things done and accomplished. Her relentless work schedule amazed me. And I heard somebody the other day say, oh my God, I got emails from her at 2 a.m. I got them at 3 and 4 a.m. And I couldn't believe that they were. So I want to thank you, honor you, tell you what a wonderful friend to the neighborhoods you've been, to me, to many people that wouldn't normally believe that a city council person would take the time to honor them. So thank you. Jim's out in the rose tending his gardens, his rose garden, and they share kind of a connection to roses. So thank you. I appreciate the ability, and you've been a star in my life, and I hope to be able to keep in contact in your next adventures.
Thanks, Mary Helen. I will say that the 4 o'clock emails were because my feet were hurting from walking in the parade in my heels.
Next up, we have Debbie Castleton.
Hello. I don't know if you can see me or just hear me.
We can hear you.
Okay. I'm Debbie Castleton. I work for Environmental Services, but I'm also the chair of the Diverse and Empowered Employees of Portland. And I want to give a sincere, heartfelt thank you to Commissioner Fritz for all of these years, your support, your presence. And I mean presence in the sense that you were the one person at City Hall that always attends everything in the community, that you've always been there. You bring your zebra car to parades. I love that. You were always even contacting me before I would have to contact everyone at City Hall to attend the Portland Gay Pride Parade and to have a presence there. And I sincerely appreciate that. Just your open door policy with me over the years, and everyone with the Deep Executive Committee, which is a volunteer group, and recognizing that, and you know, just the support of employees and the residents of City of Portland. I will miss you sincerely. I want to thank you for I didn't get to tell you this personally, but I want to thank you for being one of our Wonder Women this year. For our Wonder Woman Awards during Women's History Month, and you will be missed. I'm really proud of the video that Dr. Markeisha Smith presented and everything that was said in there, all of the work that you've done over the years, and I look forward to working with Commissioner Ryan in the future and meeting you. But Amanda, thank you. And I just sincerely appreciate you all of these years. Thank you.
Thank you, Debbie, and thank you for your leadership of the Diverse Empowered Employees of Portland. Many of the initiatives that were covered in the video and in Director Blessy's comments were because the affinity groups brought these things to our attention and helped us work through them, including the language pay differential that we did yesterday and the other improvements. So, the City Council, I know, understands that it's the city employees who do the good work and get things done for the people of Portland. So thank you for your leadership of our employees.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Jeff Selby.
Hello. Hello, everybody. Mayor Wheeler, Commissioners Ryan and Fritz. My name is Jeff Selby, for the record. I am the Communications Manager for the Office of Equity and Human Rights. Just a quick note, I want folks to know that the captioned version of the video shown at the beginning of council today is available on the Office of Equity and Human Rights Facebook page. Our apologies for not... I'm not sure what happened, but the file shown did not have the captions. So it's important to know that the accessible version is on our Facebook page. I just want to say, Commissioner Fritz, thank you so much for helping support and create the office. We are forever grateful for your support. We have been in your portfolio a relatively short amount of time over the years, but you have always been there to support us, and we really appreciate that. And I will miss sitting on the bus with you to going downtown, but I'm sure we'll ride the bus to other places maybe someday. But thank you again so much for everything, and we really appreciate it. Really gonna miss you. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff, and thank you for creating that beautiful video. I'm glad to know I'm not the only one with technology challenges as to whether how to get the captions switched on, which is why we passed the law that all television in public need to have the captions on all the time, because if you don't, then you make mistakes. And I've discovered that it's entirely possible to have the captions on without interfering with sports program. I have the captions on at home, even partly because I don't have my sons here now to tell me who did what. But I'm really proud of what we did with Carol Studemond and the advocates in the community who helped us get that project done.
Next up, we have Tatiana Elejalde.
Hello, and thank you so much for the opportunity to speak. I just wanted to just give a sincere and heartfelt thank you to Commissioner Fritz for all her support, especially in the many years of work that have culminated in really exciting being able to pass the Language Access Resolution November 12th, and yesterday passing the language pay differential policy. Of course, thank you to all of council for helping pass those resolutions, but just want to let you know, Commissioner Fritz, that you will be greatly missed. And thank you so much for all your support of all the equity work in our office. It's very important work, and we have felt your support. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Yana. Thank you for your expertise too.
And finally, today we have Dante James.
Mr. Mayor, Commissioners, Commissioner Ryan, new Commissioner Ryan, good to see you in your new position. And Commissioner Fritz, I don't really know how I can offer enough thanks and celebratory words for all that you've done for the city of Portland. You brought me in to trust me to head the office and start the Office of Equity and Human Rights up, and continue to challenge me to do all the right things the right way, and just really also really maintain the consciousness of the idea that disability needed to be front and center just as much as race. And so I truly appreciate your leadership and all the effort and all of the risks that you took to do what you did, and the arrows that you often took to continue to do the work that you did. And there's just not enough words to really celebrate how much and how hard you worked to do this work. And I truly count you as a friend and a colleague and a mentor in this. And so I truly just wanted to say thank you on the record, and glad I had a chance to do so.
Well, thank you, Dante. You certainly set up the Office of Equity and Human Rights. You gave it the foundation and got it started. So I'm very grateful, and you are the one who steered the racial equity goals through council. So thank you for that. And with that, Mayor, that is the end of our presentation, and we can, I think, move to the vote.
Very good.
Very good. Thank you, everyone. And Dante, it's good to hear your voice again. This is a resolution. Keelan, please call the roll.
Fritz.
Well, it's all been said, and rather than singling out individuals, I'm just going to say thank you to all my council colleagues. Thank you to all the community members who have helped make me a better commissioner, and particularly thank you to the city employees who do all of the work, particularly the staff who've in my office over the past 12 years, including two, I have to mention, my chief staff, Tom Bizzo, for the first 6 years, and Tim Crail for the second 6 years. So thanks to everybody. I'm really glad to see that we got stuff done. Aye.
Ryan.
Thank you so much, Commissioner Fritz, for bringing this forth, this resolution forth, and for giving us the opportunity to reflect on the last decade and the progress that we made for more equitable, inclusive, transparent, and definitely honest and just City Hall. I just want to call out from the video that I really enjoyed hearing, we look beyond compliance and look at outcomes and results, operationalize equity. And I liked when CJ Robbins of Black Male Initiative said it's not about being bad or good or fabulous or horrible. It's about letting people be. And I think that is a value that I really witness from you, Commissioner Fritz. And it's why you are so well respected by all of the staff, because you see everybody and you let them allow themselves to be. So I had other prepared remarks, but I just want to end with the fact that, you know, you don't drop balls. And so there was a thread line throughout the last decade. And so I know we always stand on shoulders, but you were the commissioner that was the thread line through this past decade. And I appreciate you. I vote aye.
Wheeler.
Thank you. I've seen in my time here that we're very good at spotting problems and coming together to respond to those problems and hopefully solving them. But we don't have what I'd call a strong practice around really pausing to mark and celebrate and learn from a job well done. Our communities needs change over time, obviously, and as we work together to adapt our services to continue meeting those needs, I believe there's a lot we can do to learn from the strategies, the approaches, and the structures captured here. Commissioner Fritz, thank you for giving us this moment to reflect back on what's been achieved in partnership over the last 10 years. As we look to a new year and a newly constituted Portland City Council, I'm really encouraged about what I think we can accomplish over the next 10 years. And that's building on the good work and the foundation that you've put down for all of us. So thank you. I vote aye. The resolution is adopted. Keelan, that completes the formal part of our meeting, does it not?
Yes, that's correct.
So we are adjourning the formal part of our meeting, but I encourage people to stick around because as Commissioner Fritz often said, and now for something completely different. I'm paraphrasing. I may not have gotten that completely right. So colleagues, I'm very pleased that we're ending the last council meeting of the year with this celebration of our friend and our colleague, Commissioner Fritz. We're deeply grateful for 12 years of service to the community. And I think we can all agree we're gonna miss her presence in these meetings. I'll be reading a special proclamation later in our the agenda on this celebration. But first, it's my understanding we have a video.
Hi, Commissioner Fritz, welcome into Fat Cart. It's Gabe Salmer, and I am so excited to welcome you here to a husband and wife owned shop just off the PSU campus, pretty close to City Hall. And if this were not the pandemic, we would be sitting here enjoying a delicious meal. Fat Cart, like more than 500 businesses across the city, received a SPUR credit, and that's thanks to you. Commissioner Fritz, you were our North Star, our guiding light in how to achieve something that we've never done before. And our SPUR credits went to businesses like Fat Cart, that are minority-owned, women-owned, childcare businesses, businesses owned by Black, Indigenous, and people of color. It was an amazing thing to be part of, and it was your vision.
Thank you so much.
Congratulations, Commissioner Fritz, and thank you for all you've done. And when this is all over, I look forward to a meeting for some really great food and conversation right up here. They have a beautiful patio.
Dear Commissioner Fritz, first of all, congratulations on your retirement. I'm really excited for you and your family, as I'm sure you'll get to spend more time together. And really, congratulations on an amazing 12 years as a city elected official. While I'm really excited that you're going to enjoy more time with your family, I'm also a little saddened to lose a true equity champion and an accomplice to all of us that have worked on equity and inclusion at the City of Portland. Over the past year and a half, I've had the great privilege of working with you and counting with your mentorship and your advice. And I feel like we've been able to really move the work of equity, diversity, inclusion at the Water Bureau forward.
Commissioner Fritz, it is Markeisha here. I am saying this with bittersweetness as I think about the transition that you're going to be making into your retirement. I remember when we first met, and I automatically knew we were going to be connected in amazing ways, and I couldn't have asked for or prayed for a better supervisor, a better mentor, really a better friend, because that's what we've become.
Hi, Commissioner Fritz. Congratulations, and thank you for everything that you've done. I wish I was there to give you a big hug in person, but instead, I'd like to give you a poem. This is Hakusai Says by Roger Keyes. Hakusai says, look carefully. He says, pay attention, notice. He says, keep looking, stay curious. He says, there's no end to seeing. He says, look forward to getting old. He says, keep changing. You just get more who you really are. He says, get stuck, accept it. Repeat yourself as long as it is interesting. He says, keep doing what you love. He says, keep praying. He says, every one of us is a child. Every one of us is ancient. Every one of us has a body. He says, every one of us is frightened. He says, every one of us has to find a way to live with fear. He says that everything is alive. Shells, building, fish, people, mountains, trees. Wood is alive. Water is alive. Everything has its own life. Everything lives inside us. He says, live with the world inside you. He says, it doesn't matter if you draw or write books. It doesn't matter if you saw wood or catch fish. It doesn't matter if you sit at home and stare at the ants on your veranda or the shadows of the trees and the grasses in your garden. It matters that you care. It matters that you feel. It matters that you notice. It matters that life lives through you. Contentment is life living through you. Joy is life living through you. Satisfaction and strength is life living through you. He says, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. Love, feel, let life take you by the hand. Let life live through you. Thank you for everything that you've done, Amanda. Take good care.
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. With over 5 years as our commissioner, you are leaving a lasting legacy for Portland's parks and recreation system, for the benefit of current and future generations. You helped to pass the $68 million parks replacement bond to fix our parks, pools, maintenance facilities, and our city's living room at Pioneer Courthouse Square. You allocated more than $70 million in system development charges to help close park service gaps, especially in East Portland. The Bureau got to celebrate a lot. The most memorable moments were the completion of many brand new parks serving thousands of new households at Cully, Gateway Discovery, Spring Garden Parks, and Lewitt View. We worked together with community partners like Under Armour to bring new turf soccer fields to Lentz and Dunaway Parks. Gateway Green is now a regional cycling and hiking destination. You've been a champion for our city's urban forests because you understood the value of trees to people's health, to nature, and to help mitigate climate change. Thank you for working to strengthen protections for trees and to expand Portland's tree canopy. You led us through many changes to make Portland Parks and Recreation more equitable and inclusive. We hired our first equity manager and created our first five-year racial equity plan. We established the Parks for New Portlanders program,
The park ranger team is effective and has more personnel, and we work with our labor partners to improve the wages and benefits for our employees. As we have seen this year, our parks and services matter more than ever to Portlanders. They are important spaces for the community to exercise their bodies, their minds, and their voices. And because of you, more Portlanders have access to these spaces. On behalf of all of us at Portland Parks and Recreation and the community, thank you so very, very much.
Really can't put into words how much your leadership, your vision, and your support has allowed for me to do the amazing work that we've been able to accomplish so far at the city to support not only tribal people here in the city, but to also start those relationships with tribal governments that they have been waiting from the city of Portland. Your vision to acknowledge tribal sovereignty, uphold treaty rights and trust responsibility, and to ensure that Native people can continue to practice their culture now and into the future is so poignant and so thanked by so many people. I hear constantly from tribal leaders that they wish that their cities near their reservations would follow our lead, that they appreciate being welcomed into the city and how much that makes them feel a little more sense of comfort while every day they are in defense mode of their treaty rights. So just know that there's so many people besides just me that thank you for the work that you've done.
Hello, Commissioner Amanda. This is Mike Jordan. I thought that looking at this tree would be a lot nicer than looking at my mug. Your legacy will be one of community involvement and a humanity and grace that we show each other as we tackle tough issues is an example that we all strive to live up to.
Not only talking about the business of equity, which by the way, you are strongly committed to and have been an amazing support for our office, but also just talking about life. And I think we shared a moment and probably, I don't know, 3 or 4 months into the job. And we just talked about how it is to be going through something and having to also live your life very publicly. And I'll never forget that. Your situation was very different from mine, but I was also grieving. And I remember you just sort of offering comfort to me. And I knew right away that I was in the right place and that this was the right time. And this was the work that I was supposed to be doing. And so I'll just forever be indebted to you for that. And here we are now. And I just want to say a huge thank you for all that you have been for our office, all that you have worked through council, things that we thought were impossible. You've made possible, and we're set up, and I think we're in a place that we're ready to go and do the work, and we couldn't have done that without you, without your foundation. I'm looking for my cookies, promise me that, and also a footstool, because we talked about how important it was to rest our feet. So I know I will see you soon. This is not the last time that I'll have the opportunity to talk to you. Thank you so much. Best wishes to you. Love you.
Hey Amanda, Mark here from Portland Thorns, wishing you all the very best in retirement. Very grateful and thankful for all your support of the Portland Thorns. Hopefully we get to see you at Providence Park in the near future. Take care.
I think that's the end of the video, I hope, right? Yes, good. What a great video. Terrific. It is now my pleasure to introduce Jeff Curtis, who's the CEO of the Roast Festival. Welcome, Jeff.
Thank you, distinguished Mayor. Mayor Wheeler, good to see you. Commissioner Ryan, Mr. Fritz, my pleasure to join you this afternoon in honoring Commissioner Fritz on behalf of the nonprofit Portland Roast Festival Foundation. I wanted to just tell a brief acknowledgement and story about how I met Amanda and the what role she's played in the Roast Festival in this appropriate send-off. And I go back 13 years ago, and some of you may recall the famous duct tape controversy of 2007. And that time, Commissioner Randy Leonard, it's our centennial parade, the biggest parade we've ever put on the street. Months and months and months of planning went into that. And that week on a Monday, Commissioner Leonard made a decision to publicly say that he was going to introduce an emergency ordinance at council on a Wednesday to say that the parade, the community could not mark their spaces along the route in advance. Mm-hmm. And it was known as the duct tape controversy. He'll say today that he got more emails on that topic than he ever got in his years before that. And when the dust settled from that and council gave him and me some direction about what how to move forward, we created the famous Parade Accessibility Task Force. And I remember that first meeting in July after the parade, and I'm sitting with Randy. We did the task force was not made up yet, and we were deciding who was going to be on this task force. And he had his list of names, and I had my list of names. And he brought up the first name out of his mouth was Amanda Fritz, and I recall Amanda's role from the outside, from my role as a public advocate, someone who was at council a lot, someone very active in the interest of the community, and clearly was very active in his inbox as well, a number of topics. And my reaction was, wow, okay, Amanda. I didn't know her, but I knew that she is a force. And she joined this group, and it was a great group, and we got a lot of work done. And I learned very quickly of her, what she really is, and her passion for Portland, and passion for the human life and character and the community, a lot of which the Roast Festival exemplifies. And thus, a year later, she was elected to council and has been given the honor of the, as our distinguished council liaison at least twice in her tenure, maybe three times separately. And she's been a tireless and passionate advocate for Portland and its values. And at the end of the day, cares deeply about the Rose City and the brand of roses itself and the whole concept of how celebration matters and bringing people together in a community. And the Rose Festival and the spirit of that has taken place. So it's my honor on behalf of my board to say thank you to you, Amanda, for your service to this community, not just your service to Rose Festival, although that's been really important. It's what you've done for this city over the last 12 years. So thank you on that. I wanted to officially in this setting let you know, since you did not get your last chance to ride in the parade as an elected official, because the parades would not take place in 2020, that I'm happy to say you have a ride waiting for you next year when we can get the Starlight Parade cranked up again, whenever that takes place. So be ready for that. But this my official invitation to you. And on behalf of my organization, I want to just give you something. I'll share this. Hopefully I can get it to share my screen here real quick and just share it. Oh, hold on a sec. There you go. It's just a little plaque that commemorates your service to the organization with some key people, including myself. And on the back of the plaque, it says, thank you, Amanda, for your tremendous service to the City of Roses. You'll be forever known as the creator and founder of Portland's official festival designation. And a quick side note to that is that, you know, a lot of the council was proud of that distinction in 2010. You were a champion of that. I had several council members who say they created that designation, but ultimately you get ultimate. It was really your idea, your concept to bring it forward as be Portland's official festival. After a century of working together with the city and different ordinances and all kinds of different actions, we actually never had a formal acknowledgement of its official status. So you deserve that. History will say that. And on behalf of my organization and me personally, thank you, Commissioner Fritz, for your service.
Thanks so much, Jeff, for all your service as well. It's been fun working with you.
Thanks, Jeff. Good afternoon. My name is Yesenia Carrillo, and I've had the honor of working alongside Commissioner Fritz for a little over 2 years as her constituent relations specialist and policy advisor. I'm here today to offer Commissioner Fritz some words of gratitude and to share with you all the impact on the lives she's had of her employees. 28 people from all walks of life and backgrounds, half of them identifying as BIPOC and 26 identifying as women, have worked with Commissioner Fritz during her 12 years in office, each one embracing her commitment to public service and finding their own voice for it along the way. And each one leaving for greater heights in public service, higher education, and well-earned retirement. These employees thank her for the personal and professional support she has offered them throughout the years. In a lot of ways, today is a sad day for all of us, but especially for her staff and her work family. We are losing an amazing colleague who has become our mentor and friend. Commissioner Fritz, we will miss you and your good work. We will miss drinking tea with you during our weekly one-on-ones. We will miss walking with you in parades and attending community events with you. We will miss cheering on the Thorns with you. We will miss your morning greeting and evening goodbye. We will miss your good humor, your leadership, and your willingness to listen to us, especially when we were facing some real obstacles. We find comfort in knowing that you will only be a phone call away and that you will now have more time for yourself, your cat Chasta, your granddaughter Leia Rose, and your children. We will miss you, Commissioner, but we know that you will not forget us. Commissioner Fritz, we wish you well, and thank you for your many years of service. Thank you from me, Austri, Claire, Cynthia, Nissan, and Tim.
Thank you, Yesenia. Appreciate that.
At this point, I am about to read a proclamation, but before I do that, Commissioner Ryan, did you have any comments you'd like to make?
Thank you, Mayor. Sure. Thank you. I had something formally written, and now I'm kind of beklempt from the moment. So I'm going to just look at this little blue dot. That's what we do. And speak from my heart. I just want to say the first time I was taking some notes down, the first time I witnessed you, you don't remember this perhaps, but it was in either 2004 or 2005. And you were at a school board meeting. Because one of your sons, whether it was Luke or Maxwell, I don't know, was one of Wilson High School's valedictorians. And you were starting to run for city council, I believe, so I knew your name. And I just recall how enthusiastic and joyful you were. And trust me, you remember those type of parents at school board meetings. And then I recall a couple meetings in your office, and you always, in my former role, and you would always just cut to the chase. And now I realize why, because there's only so much time for these meetings, but you also just got right to the bottom line and didn't really tell me, you didn't want to talk, you didn't want to have a lot of soft talk. You just wanted to get right to the bottom line. So I was like, okay, this Commissioner Fritz is tough. And then I sat next to you at a football game. It was at Roosevelt High School, and they were dedicating their new field. And this is when I decided I'm all in for Amanda Fritz, because it was cold and it was windy and all the other dignitaries pretty much left after the first quarter. And I noticed you were into the game, and I was too. And so it was really fun to know I had a sports friend. And so I'm not surprised. I've seen you from afar at a Duck game, but I look forward to someday when we might run into each other, maybe have a planned gathering at a tailgater down at Autzen Stadium someday, or sit with you at a Thorns game. Anyway, I appreciate that you have that joyful side. But I just want to end with, I wasn't surprised when I started, and I started just 3 months ago, and it was a really an awful week for, I think, everybody. It was that week where the fires were devastating our great state, and we were basically all locked in, and I was my first meetings, and there were a few technical difficulties. It was just a really memorable week, right? And it was the end of the week, and we had our first check-in, and you were just so helpful. And so you gave me some really good advice. And I'm just going to say one, don't let others' urgencies be your urgency. And I repeat that to myself a lot over the last 3 months. You walk your talk. You're all about integrity. It's all about the people. And I just want to say thank you so much for making my first 3 months doable. And it's so great to finally see your face because we've been working together pretty intensely the last 3 months. And I've only seen that little still shot or talked to on the phone. So I really feel like I'm hugging you right now, Commissioner Fritz. Anyway, thank you, staff, for setting that up for whoever did it, or one of the sons that was a former valedictorian. Anyway, I'm just thrilled that I know you, and I feel close to you, and I look forward to getting advice from you and having you as a volunteer to help me navigate the many details of this job.
Thank you so much, Dan. It's been an absolute joy to work with you, and it's kind of ironic that I'm now fading to dark as I can't put the lights on while I'm starting. Really fast, please, Mayor, because otherwise I'm going to literally be kind of blacked out by the end of it.
So, Commissioner Fritz, one thing you've missed by just having that little screenshot of you rather than your face is you never invested in the lights that are required.
So, well, I do have to get up and switch them on, and that would seem a bit rude.
Not at all. Not at all. That's part of Zoom. As the sun goes down at 3:30 or whatever time it starts to go down here, that is the protocol. So, Commissioner Fritz, I'll give you the last word, but I'll take this opportunity to read the proclamation. This is on behalf of all of us, not just the City Council, but all of us at City Hall, and it's on behalf of a grateful city. Whereas Commissioner Amanda Fritz was first elected to the Portland City Council in 2008 with 72% of the vote, promising to spend taxpayers' money wisely to provide basic services in all 95 neighborhoods, and was re-elected to serve second and third terms in 2012 with 60% of the vote, and 2016 with 69% of the vote. And she has worked with three mayors and 10 different council colleagues. And whereas her core principle in City Hall has been, quote, as an elected official, the commissioner makes decisions based on facts and broad public input, seeking the long-term public good for the whole city with shared benefits and responsibilities for all Portlanders present and future, unquote. And whereas during her 12 years in office, she's been the commissioner in charge of the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, the Office of Human Relations, the Bureau of Emergency Communications, the Office of Healthy Working Rivers, the Office of Cable Communications and Franchise Management, the Bureau of Development Services, Portland Parks and Recreation, the Office of Equity and Human Rights, the Portland Water Bureau, and the Bureau of Environmental Services, and served as the city's representative on the Visitors Development Fund Board for 12 years, the Metro Policy Advisory Committee for 8 years, and the League of Oregon Board, the League of Oregon Cities Board for 4 years. And whereas Commissioner Fritz has been a champion for equity, transparency, justice, and community involvement in the city of Portland. She co-founded the Office of Equity and Human Rights in 2011, passed the paid sick leave policy at the city in 2013 that led to statewide adoption of benefits for all workers. She created the Open and Accountable Elections Program in 2016, and she led the campaigns to pass 5 ballot measures benefiting the people of Portland over her time in office with a high of 88% voter approval. And whereas in 2012, the council unanimously voted to formalize the city's commitment to authentic relationships with tribal government partners, leading to the establishment of the Tribal Relations Director position in the Office of Government Relations. And Commissioner Fritz and Mayor Charlie Hales created, and Mayor Wheeler expanded, a comprehensive tribal relations program to provide a strong internal structure for establishing and maintaining relationships with and improving the city's service to sovereign tribal nations and the urban Native American community. It's a national model for establishing respect for tribal nation and indigenous people's rights. And whereas Commissioner Fritz, a champion for fiscal responsibility, established structures and programs that make sure taxpayers' money is spent wisely. In partnership with Commissioner Nick Fish, she established the Independent City Budget Office in 2013, providing objective financial analysis of Bureau spending to the City Council and to the whole community. She passed the rule that 50% of any one-time budget surplus must be spent on infrastructure maintenance, resulting in over $65 million being invested on urgent repair needs in parks, transportation, and emergency preparedness. And whereas Parks Commissioner for over 5 years, Commissioner Fritz directed the construction of 5 new parks in some of the most underserved neighborhoods in Portland, as well as the greatest expansion of park restroom facilities in the Bureau's history, including the city's first gender-neutral multi-stall restroom at Pioneer Courthouse Square. She also championed the establishment of the Parks for New Portlanders program to engage immigrant and refugee community members in our parks and recreation system, passed the 2014 Parks Replacement Bond, investing $68 million in vital maintenance and repairs, and she worked to pass the 2020 Parks Levy. And whereas Commissioner Fritz, in partnership with community partners, passed amendments in city healthcare policy that led the state in requiring insurance coverage for cognitive behavioral therapy for people on the autism spectrum, that led to state law changes. And whereas, as at Commissioner Fritz's guidance in 2020, council adopted citywide policies pursuing racial and disability rights, including the citywide disability equity goals and the city's language access policy and program and the language pay differential bonus for multilingual employees who interact with diverse community members, thus increasing meaningful equitable access to city government communities experience institutional barriers. And whereas in 2020, Commissioner Fritz, in partnership with the Bureau of Human Resources, began adding the Pathways to Parenting, Family Planning, and Fertility Benefits in city insurance for same-sex couples, single parents, and employees seeking adoption and/or surrogacy services in a process inspired by Senior Policy Director Claire Adamsick. And whereas, due to the 2015 Fritz Fairchild Act, which passed at the state legislature at the request of Commissioner Fritz with the support from the Office of Government Relations, all interstate highways throughout Oregon are safer because of the installation of median crash barriers, an action that has saved countless lives. And whereas, Commissioner Fritz has been a long-standing land use and planning advocate and worked to lead and support comprehensive plan policies to protect manufactured mobile home parks, protect open space, leverage the city's development rights and assets, oppose coal and oil trains traveling through Portland, and establish and uphold restrictions on fossil fuel terminals in Portland. And whereas Commissioner Fritz has personally responded to over 70,000 constituent messages, walked in almost every community parade, accompanied for 14 years by volunteers Robert Wilson and Mark Strabois, and attended hundreds of community meetings and events, thus connecting Portlanders with their elected leaders. And whereas, over 12 years, Commissioner Fritz has supported 28 staff, including 26 identifying as women and almost half as people of color working in her office, each one embracing her commitment to public service, helping her with the things she couldn't do alone, and supporting her on personal and professional levels. And each one has gone on to greater heights in public service, higher education, or well-earned sabbatical or retirement. And whereas Commissioner Fritz has been supported in her public service and volunteer roles and city leadership by her family, including spouse, Dr. Stephen Fritz, children, Luke, Maxwell, and Alessandra, daughters-in-law, Alicia and Brianna, Alicia and Brianna, parents-in-law, Colonel Edward and Emily Fritz, parents, Max and Pamela Jones, and siblings, Peter and Sue. Whereas, December 17th is a special day because in 2001, Commissioner Fritz, in this day, she and the registered nurses at OHSU walked out on strike in protest of hospital policies and practices and stayed out picketing until the successful conclusion of the strike 56 days later. And December 17th, 2020, marks the last council session of Commissioner Fritz's service. Now, therefore, I, Ted Wheeler, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim December 17th, 2020, as Team Amanda Fritz Day in honor and celebration of Commissioner Fritz's 12 years of service to our community on the Portland City Council, and ask all residents to observe this day.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, colleagues. Thank you, staff. Just thank you. It's been an honor and a privilege to serve you and the people of Portland, and I look forward to seeing what what Commissioner Ryan, Mayor Wheeler, your staff, everybody on this call, you're going to do even more things. So thank you. I love you. I love you, Portland. It's been great serving you.
And we'll look forward to more. Thank you all. Thank you all for being here. And ordinarily, we would be like celebrating in the atrium right now.
There is a Zoom atrium coming right up, so I'm going to go.
All right. Thank you all. Appreciate it. And we'll see you shortly.
Happy New Year.
Thank you. Happy New Year.